time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is in Mexico City. Richard Campbell's in Sofia, Bulgaria, but they're both here in spirit. We will talk about Microsoft's earnings. It was, shall we say, a good quarter. We'll also talk about Qualcomm's announcements yesterday. How soon before we see a decent PC running Windows on ARM? And then a three-hour interview with Dave Cutler, Xbox News, and passkeys, and more. Plus a little brown liquor all coming up next. Actually, it's a golden hue when we talk Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell. Episode 852, recorded Wednesday, October 25th, 2023. Carnival Barker Lifestyle. Windows Weekly is brought to you by our friends at IT Pro TV, now called ACI Learning. Keep your IT team's skills up with the speed of technology. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. Twit listeners, you'll receive up to 65% off an IT Pro Enterprise Solution Plan. Just complete the form, and then based on your team size, you'll get the proper quote, a discount tailored to your needs. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get together and talk about none other than Microsoft, with these two right here, who have spread to the four corners of the world. Mr. Richard Campbell is in Sofia, Bulgaria. Hello,
hello.
Richard. What brings you to Bulgaria?
An airplane. It was too far to walk.
Yeah. And I set him up for that.
He's here all week, folks.
I was right there.
Paul Thurrott. I'm not going to ask what brought you to Mexico City. He is at his second home, which you now have a deed to, I see.
Yes.
Congratulations.
I mean, yeah. Well, the deed gives us one legal right that's very important.
What's that?
We can now sell it. can't sell it without the deed.
You have no intent of doing that, I don't
think. No. But I mean, that's the, you know, we were told this was going to take 3 to 6 months, you know, bureaucracy in Mexico, blah, 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 whatever. 18 months, they were close.
Is it like, so it's like the pink slip to a car, basically.
It is, except it's an inch thick.
Yeah.
It's
what? It's not a piece of paper?
It's the Lord of the Rings.
That's hysterical.
It's a very thick document, yeah. And it's on giant size paper, too. It's not nice. 8 by 11 or 8
1
or whatever.
With like gold stamps and seals? And
yeah, there's all kinds of stuff all over it. It's unbelievable.
That's why it takes so long. They've got to print that up.
I think we employed half the country just to get this paperwork done.
Anyway, congratulations to both of you. I don't know what for, but anyway, well done. How are you going to be in Bulgaria just for the week, Richard?
Yeah, I'm going home on Saturday.
Oh, good. All right. So you're there for a conference or a speech or something?
I am there for a conference. I did my speech today. I got some press stuff tomorrow.
Nice.
Touring a wine region on Friday.
Nice. Nice. So there's two things we have to talk about. We covered the Qualcomm. At least. I'll start with the first two. We covered the Qualcomm event yesterday. We'll talk about that in a bit. But Microsoft's earnings have appeared, and they did okay.
Look at these numbers.
PC sales are even up, which surprised me.
Well, not PC sales. Windows licenses, which suggests PC sales will be on the rise, right? Because PC makers buy those licenses.
It's a leading indicator of PC sales. Okay.
We're in such a space now where like a 4% bump in Windows license sales has caused for, you know, confetti to fall from the ceiling. Woo! But that's where we're at. So I guess high level, Microsoft made a lot of money. So no surprises there.
22.3
the AI
billion.
Play clearly has worked.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Like that's the thing. Just as the cloud was slowing down, they went hard on this AI thing. And here we are 2 quarters later. They look shiny.
Yep. $56 billion in revenues. Not bad. These figures are up 27 and 13% respectively. So it's not just that they're big, they're growing big too. Double digit growth at this level. Are you kidding me? Like, it's crazy. Intelligent cloud, they have three business units. Microsoft does. Intelligent cloud is the biggest. It's been for a while. This is the part that has Azure and will be where a lot of that AI stuff goes. 24.3 billion in revenues. That's almost 50%, folks. That's crazy. Also up 19%. Productivity and business processes, what most people think of as Microsoft 365 and some other stuff, Dynamics, et cetera. Second biggest business, $18.6 billion in revenues, up 13%. Office commercial is going great. And then more Mercer Computing brings up the rear at $13.7 billion, which is a lot of money, but 3% growth. They've been stuck in the same area for a while now, unfortunately. And as I think Leo said, one of the little shining flowers there in the dung heap is Windows revenues from PC makers grew 4% year over year, which, you know, at the time I said may be a positive sign for a future PC market growth. After Microsoft had their post earnings conference call, they confirmed that. So not a lot of bad points. Actually, most of more personal computing is not great. Surface revenues declined 22%. Xbox count content and services were up 13. Hardware was down, I think it was 7%. You know, I don't think a lot's changed on the Xbox side. Oh, except for that acquisition. That's going to change stuff quite a bit. So every quarter I look more deeply at the earnings. I look at mostly the consumer stuff because obviously, you may recall last quarter I looked at AI, you know, specifically how is Microsoft going to pay for this? And the answer is with cash. And the reason for that is that Microsoft makes so much money. So for example, this quarter, the figure, what was it? 20 something billion on 50 something billion. They have approximately $30 billion of extra cash. The run rate on AI for them right now is somewhere in the 10 billion per quarter, but rising. Wow. Yeah. But that means they can mostly pay for this with cash, right? And I think that's very interesting. So last quarter, the big bang thing was AI. How are they going to pay for it? We just, you know, kind of went through that. Although they discussed that again this quarter and not much has changed. Actually, they spent a little less on AI this quarter, but they were saying this is going to go up and down. It's going to go up over time. It will. We might have quarters where it's a little bit of a bump in whatever direction.
Quarterly revenues from Activision Blizzard is in the $2 billion range. Presumably, that's going to land under more personal computing, and that's a good 10% spike.
You are correct, sir. And so sometime over the summer, I wrote an analysis of what would last the four previous quarters for Microsoft had looked, what would they have looked like had they already owned Activision Blizzard?
Right.
And you're right. It's about $2 billion. Yeah. Per quarter. It would change more personal computing's quarterly revenues by an average of about 13%, which is actually pretty significant. And since you brought it up, I'll just point out that part of every earnings report and the conference call afterwards is they look forward and say, this is what we expect for the coming quarter. And they actually do break it down per business units, not just for the company as a whole. And they expect more personal computing to jump by an Activision. So when compared with the year ago quarter. So not exactly, right? I mean, there's other things going on in there. It's a holiday quarter. Xbox should see something, something. But honestly, the difference between last year and this year is Activision. Yeah.
Right. I got to wonder, like Activision has 10 major data centers to run World of Warcraft and others.
Yeah. Right.
I got to think all that stuff ends up being Azure eventually.
Yep. And so, yeah, then that's part of it. They didn't get that specific, but basically there's going to be a period of time where those transitions occur. The other thing is, I guess that from an accounting perspective, and it might just have to do with licensing costs or whatever it might be, but there is a difference between a first party and a third party studio in terms of cost and revenue, and that's going to be changing over time. They also mentioned a total of $900 million in expenses related to this over the next two quarters.
Which should be a lot of money for any other company.
A billion here, a billion there, you know.
We were talking about the deed. So you buy a house and it costs us, I don't know, we'll say $68 billion. So over the next couple of quarters, you don't just stop spending money, right? Now you got to heat the house. Yeah. You know, you got to do whatever. There are other costs and you have to go to town hall and there's licensing for this and, you know, things you have to fill out. And I think that's what the $900 million per quarter is. It's sure. The other stuff, you know, it's just. Acquisition.
Well, I
got
to think they're going to have to start rolling off that hardware as it expires out. Like, you figure a minimum 5-year migration for all of that stuff. Like, the IT guy in me is just doing the numbers and like, oh,
sure,
man, you need to hire an army to get moving on that.
It's complicated. Yeah.
Or you push a year and you're buying a new set of hardware and adding another year onto the 5-year run, right?
Like, so I was reading the transcript for the call, and I noticed at one point they referred to Activision as Activision Blizzard King. And I thought to myself, what is this company called? You know? So I counted the number of times that they referenced the company in the call. Where is this in here? I don't even see it. I wrote about this somewhere. They referred to it in turn as Activision. That was the most common reference. Right. Activision Blizzard, I think twice. Only once. And Activision Blizzard King twice. And it's kind of a weird...
Where's the King come from?
King is King, like Blizzard is part of Activision. So King is the mobile
probably
division.
Probably the biggest division, I bet, with Candy Crush.
They do Candy Crush. Sometimes they call it ABK.
I've been seeing ABK a lot.
Yeah, that's there you go. That's it. Yeah. Right. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I just these little things occur where I'm like, what is, you know, like I count the number of times they say AI, Windows, Microsoft Cloud, you know, pick your term. AI was still the biggest reference in this conference call, other than words
big.
You know, that's the big. Actually happened more than AI, but I don't think they're strategically aligned around it.
Do you take a transcript and then do a concordance of all the words? Is that what you're doing? That's wild.
I do a lot of things. Hold on. There's a reason. I'm not just insane. There's Microsoft.
Are you sure?
But I'm not just insane. So. Okay. When Microsoft comes out publicly like this, especially to investors, right, they have to be careful about what they say. This is all planned in advance. And when you, I think it's important to see what they talk about most, right? So for a long time now, they have not uttered the word Surface, not once in one of these conference calls. I think that's telling. I'm just saying, you know, Windows comes up a certain number of times, et cetera, but, you know, Microsoft is sending a message to Wall Street, right? And when they talk about AI all the time, that's the message. And I think that's the, you know, that's one of those just, you know, high level takeaway. So AI was over 35 times. Azure was 21 times. Office 17, Windows 12. Those are the big ones. By the way, they said Copilot 29 times. So when you add, this is both AI, right? So AI plus Copilot 64 or something like that.
You look for a large language model or machine learning, like, you know, all
No, I did not. No, because it's a conference call with investors, right? They're not going to talk like that. They have to keep this, you know, we introduce
Copilot. Short word.
We don't have LLMs, Richard. We have Copilots. Come on. You know, these are investors, right? So anyway, to me, these calls are always fascinating. And the, you know, the what they say and what they don't say, I think is fascinating. So
no, I think you're right. You got to read the tea leaves. And
Yeah. So, you know, obviously I care about the consumer kind of client side. And, you know, there's not a lot of talk there. Windows and Surface both, Surface especially, my God, they never mentioned Surface. Like I said, they talk about devices now. 22% decline in revenues there, which was ahead of expectations, meaning we thought it was going to be worse.
Right.
So, yikes. And that's all they said about it. That was the entire conversation on Surface. There's nothing more
than an anticipated blip that the overbuy of the last 2 years had to come. And they always threatened to come in third quarter, and here it is. Completely overwhelmed by better news.
And they had that kind of lack. It was very late in the quarter, but that late September, mid-September launch of a couple of devices, you know, was never really going to impact things too much because of the timing.
And they're for sale in October, so they missed the quarter. But that's
they missed it entirely. Yeah.
You so we'll ship see what hardware in October. That's the norm.
Well, the good news is that business is only going to decline by single digits next quarter, so everything's going to be fine.
I'm excited.
So Windows, we already talked about the good news there. And they did say very explicitly that this suggests stronger than expected consumer channel inventory builds, right? In other words, they're buying licenses to put the computers in the channel so they can sell them over the holiday quarter. And stabilizing PC market demand, particularly in commercial. Stabilizing doesn't mean growing, by the way, but we'll take it, right? It's been kind of tough lately.
You know, there's nothing wrong with building the right number of things for the market that it needs so that you're making money on the money that's available.
You're right. But
loading excess inventory or you're strangling sale flow, that becomes a big deal.
Yeah. Right. Well, I they brought up a term I've not heard in a while, which was, and they qualified it a little bit, but pre-pandemic levels. And what they were saying was PC market unit volumes, which is a tough term, sales, right? PC sales were at roughly pre-pandemic levels in the quarter.
Right. So the numbers they got in 2019.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's okay, right?
We've been talking about this for 2 years, that this was where it was going to land. Here it is.
Yeah, I know. It's just hard to get smacked in the face when you wake up.
I'm not used to U.S. corporations thinking quarter to quarter, much more quarter to quarter, much less year to year. Holy cow, did you think 4 years ago? Who are you?
Listen, I've said this a bunch of times. I will never understand the mass insanity that occurred in big tech when the pandemic buying boom occurred and they were like, whoa! You know, with no sense that this would ever come to an end.
It's going
to
be like this forever. The line only goes up.
That was just the most unsophisticated miscalculation. I will never understand that. And then Xbox got a lot of press in this call. Starfield off to a record start, 11 million players. Nearly half of the hours spent playing the game on PC, not on console, by the way. They set a record. This is interesting. They set a single day record for the most ever Game Pass subscriptions added on the day that Starfield launched, right?
Wow.
Which is, that is fascinating to me. This was
and
never
now
referenced
you're getting
again.
Into the real play. This is the real play. Well, sell Game Pass.
They just acquired Activision Blizzard. Activision Blizzard every year has a big bang October, November because of Call of Duty. Billion, whatever it is, set records, all this kind of stuff. And the fear here is like, well, what if Microsoft puts Call of Duty next on, you know, Game Pass, and then they don't have those records, right? If they can make it up, and I don't think it's a one-to-one, but if they can somehow make it up in Game Pass subscriptions, you know, maybe this is a good thing. So we'll see how they handle that. But that was maybe the most interesting line in this whole thing to me. We already know about Minecraft, 300 million copies sold cumulatively. One of the biggest games ever made. Not a lot of context here. I mean, aside from, here's some context. Microsoft now has three game franchises that have over $1 billion in revenues each. Now that's cumulative, right? Over multiple versions in some cases, like Halo and Gears of War are in this list. Both of those games have several major, you know, upgrade versions or whatever, like standalone versions, right? So it's kind of tough. You know, they're not going to get too specific here, but a bunch of those came from Activision Blizzard, right? Candy Crush, Diablo, Warcraft, et cetera. Yep. So that's cool. That's great for Game Pass going forward. Office, there's not much to say here either. It's all good. The businesses are shifting from standalone on-prem copies of Office to Office / Microsoft 365 subscriptions. That's the way it's been for a long, long time. So you see this.
No on-prem version of Copilot. You got to be on it.
That's true. Which, by the way, may be a selling point. You're right.
Kidding.
Let me see if I can find where this is, because they talked about, maybe it's in the AI part. Microsoft, you know, you have to sift through what I would call the BS in these discussions, because Satya Nadella gets up and talks about all the great milestones, you know. And he says something like, oh, and we shipped the biggest upgrade ever for Windows 11. In the quarter, and we delivered Microsoft Copilot on Windows 11. And it's like, did you? Because you shipped that thing a week before the quarter ended in preview form. It's still in preview form, and not everybody has all the features. So I'm not sure what you're celebrating here. But the next
thing. Now, you remember, these are investors. They don't want technical detail.
Okay, but do they want facts? Because to me, that was borderline like, oh, did you? I mean,
misdisclosure.
I think so. Yeah. Microsoft is also, you'll be surprised to know, excited for the delivery of Microsoft 365 Copilot in general availability on November 1st, which is next week, right? Mm-hmm. But also they revealed, don't expect any big bumps from this. It says related revenue will grow gradually over time. That was their whole comment on that. So,
do they talk about costs of it?
Yes. Okay. So I mentioned the.
There'll be revenue eventually, but there's also not going to be a lot of profit. It's going to be one
Microsoft
of those
will
Xbox
yeah, they will never
profit
say,
sinks.
No, and well, so first of all, no one talks about profits anymore, Leo. That's hilarious. So we only talk about revenues. I mean, the profits are made by the company. We have no idea where they come
from.
Well,
net
income.
Is one
business subsidizing?
Net income. That's profit, right?
It's profits. Yeah. No, but that's only.
But it's always
at the company level. It's only at the company level. You're never going to get net income for anything below
for individual
Microsoft.
Things. Yeah.
Right.
Do not know what products are profitable.
Yeah. So the issue here is such things as, so for example, like Azure growth was amazing. They did mention that amazing, you know, in context, right? And that part of that had to do with third-party AI adoption, and they're using Azure services. So that's great. But also, they're doing a spend on AI infrastructure, which will also hit the Azure part of the business. And that was actually down a little bit at quarter over quarter, but they expect it to keep going up and up and up. And so where these two things kind of balance each other out or don't, we're never going to find. They're never going to give us that information. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to say.
This is modern reporting, right? Like,
yeah, this is the Amy Hood
and together into a bucket
century.
Of happy noises.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So I think that's most of it from my perspective. I think the things to look forward to are going to be the rolling in of Activision into more personal computing from a revenue perspective, and then how they report, you know, game sales and whatever those things are. And then, of course, AI, right? Obviously, every quarter is going to be all about AI. Microsoft is looking forward to some future where this wonderful set of circumstances converge, where they have lots and lots of customers using and paying for AI, have developed or licensed chipsets that are much cheaper to deliver that infrastructure, and that the growth in infrastructure need kind of slows down, so they're not continually building out new infrastructure. But right now, they're in the growth phase, and you know, you're putting up scaffolding here. I mean,
yeah,
by
all sides, like buying as much gear as they can get and sticking it in the rack as fast as they can.
Yeah, exactly.
Is not a bad place to be, but it is a race.
It's I guess it's technically risky. I think Microsoft is, this will work. I mean, they made nearly $30 billion in profits.
Yes. They can afford it. There's no two ways about it. But it's astonishing to think a year ago, half of this wasn't even on the radar, right? Like only GitHub Copilot this time last year.
You know, every quarter we enter into what I call earnings season, and I hate it because there are so many companies you have to kind of look at. And I look at Microsoft the most. Google was the other company that announced their earnings yesterday. And I have to say, from the perspective of whatever you want to call me, like a reporter, blogger, whatever, I would not want to cover Google from like a product services perspective because there's so much of it. But I would love to cover them from a financials perspective because it's so easy. There's nothing going on here. These guys have two basic businesses, ads and Google Cloud. Ads is 71% of their revenues. Google Cloud, honestly, is growing great, but is disappointing investors because it's not growing great enough against Azure and AWS. This company makes a ton of money. Not as profitable this quarter as Microsoft, but they made more in revenue. So $19.7 billion of net income profit and almost $77 billion in revenues. Incredible. Huge company. So I don't know what else to say there. I mean, like Microsoft from Google executives about products that don't matter. They're like, oh, Pixel, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. How many percentage points of revenues did that thing generate for you this year? 0.00 whatever. I mean, so it's a very simple company, honestly.
It's an ad company. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an ad company.
A little too simple.
Yeah.
By the way, thank you. That's exactly right. And, you know, Mike, we talk about this a lot, but when Microsoft was the Windows company, they made an effort to diversify. Apple, when they were the iPhone, it is the iPhone company, but when they were only the iPhone company, they made an effort to diversify. Google, I feel like Google Cloud has a chance to be a big business, but honestly, it's like it's the also-ran which is very strange given their capabilities.
I think part of this is they just haven't built enough.
Yeah.
Right. What's the decision? I mean, obviously, the people mostly use cloud are businesses, right?
Yeah.
It's not AI generation.
There's two halves to that, right? Well, I know AI is part of it, right? So
yeah, but
there's what I would call the traditional office productivity market, which is workspace, and then there's Google Cloud, literally, which is the cloud in the sky, AWS type service, right? Which developers could use and whatever. So both of these are very small compared to what they're competing with, Microsoft 365 or AWS, which is strange. I mean, Google is born in the cloud, makes everything in the cloud. It seems like they would be pretty good at this stuff. They've got an incredible AI thing going on. And to your point, AI is a big part going forward. There's a duet for Workspace as well as for Google Cloud, right? So this is their Copilot, right?
I'm just wondering what is the differentiator that whoever is buying cloud looks at AWS, Microsoft, or Azure and Google, and Google's a laggard third on that. AWS is number one, right?
I think here's the problem. So technically, from a cloud perspective, first-party cloud, they're huge, right? Because they're all the services run on it, search, maps, you know, whatever. But fundamentally, they're a consumer company. And honestly, this is not a valley.
You talk about who buys GCP, startups in the valley.
Right.
There you go.
Right.
And by the way, that's smart. I would include startups and consumer, because if those startups take off, they become small businesses and become bigger businesses.
But I honestly think
at that
those
point,
are
maybe they
fractional revenues on those. I mean, those are just
I don't disagree.
But you're targeting a market that doesn't have a lot of money specifically because you hope they grow and they latch onto your more expensive.
I mean, I use GCP.
So yeah, I do too. And
so half the time they do grow and then they switch to AWS.
Yeah. That's true.
If you really want to scale, you probably do switch to AWS.
This is not
this is the weakness of Google, is their points of presence are limited compared to AWS and Azure.
Okay.
And so they tend to go to AWS because Azure's not on the radar for
it's an expensive investment for them to make with little short term reward. And but you know what? Microsoft made it.
Microsoft also had cash to commit to it, right? Like they also had it at a time when they had the money.
Yeah, they had an enterprise backing, on-prem to kind of fuel that.
In the enterprise.
It's a guaranteed workload.
Yeah.
I look at Google as the mirror image of Microsoft. So Microsoft is probably no longer accurate. We'll just call it two-thirds business, one-third consumer. It's probably worse than that for consumer. But Google's like the flip it around, right? I mean, it's worse than that too. Like most of their earnings come from what I would call consumer services or services delivered to
you. Got to say, for some reason, Microsoft is really looking over its shoulder at Google. Did you see the article today? Sean Hollister in The Verge. Microsoft now thirstily injects a poll.
I know.
When you download Chrome, he actually counts the steps to try to go from Edge to Chrome. How many
We're
going to
be counting some steps later, by the way. I got some step counting myself.
One, Chrome download. Two, browse secure. All the ways Microsoft says, can you tell us why would you do this?
So I have some advice for people who run Windows and want to install Chrome and don't want to go through this. Yeah. Use WinGet. It's one line.
Oh,
one step.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do
nice.
It.
Nice. Well, there you go. And does it do that if you go to Firefox, or is it just Google that they're scared?
I've never seen this screen yet. So I think this is something they're testing out in the world. You know, I could run it. Let's everyone run Edge right now and see what happens.
It sends the wrong message, because what it really says is we're scared of Chrome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or are we scared of every browser? Like, that's the question. Is this just the response for you running anything other than Edge?
Right. So I'm not seeing it. So.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's something new. Or maybe it's A/B testing.
Actually, threw up a different little thing. It's not a bunch of steps, but it threw up a little banner on top of the Google website, actually. So, they want you to use. Let me download it.
That's what bothers him, I think, is that it's doing this injection into the Google page.
Yeah, it should. That should bother him. This should bother everybody. Yeah. This behavior is terrible.
Yeah. But what it tells me is that Microsoft still is threatened by Google.
Threatened. That's like saying a mouse is threatened by a dinosaur. It already won. There's no, well, technically,
I don't know. Microsoft
end,
made
you know
more money than Google, according
nope,
to
no,
well, and again, you're thinking of Microsoft as a conglomerate, right? The Edge team is threat.
Right.
Yes.
That's a good point.
Google had more revenue, but less net income than Microsoft.
Yeah. Right. There was a point in time where Microsoft had a really good story to tell, and I would have been happy to parrot back to people, where it's like you can get Google Chrome without any of the Google, and that sounds like such a good idea.
Yeah.
This thin, light browser that's going to, performance improvements, battery life improvements. And then you learn, actually, it's bogged down in crap. It's even more crap in that thing than there is in Chrome. And, and Microsoft tracks you too. That's great.
Yeah, they got hooked on the digital effluence so fast. Yeah. Like, it must be some kind of crack. It's like instantly, no.
It's too bad.
It's good money.
That's the problem.
Well,
you know,
let's be clear. It's bad money,
right?
But profitable.
It's okay. Yes, I was. I would have said that differently. I would have said it's money.
Yes,
and that's what they. You know, that's what they're.
It's money so that it's, comes it's at money. A cost.
Yeah. Well, to your soul, but they don't care about that. We should talk about yesterday's event.
No, I really want to talk about that, but before we do, I want to take a break because this is going to be a good one.
Because you watched this. I'm curious.
We did. We streamed it. Yeah. Well, and we saw Penne's replacement.
Yeah.
Needs a little polish.
Did you notice he spoke eloquently and seemed like a normal human being?
On the plus side, he didn't say pumped once.
That was my favorite thing about him.
He wasn't so good at reading cue cards, but other than that, he was
okay. You know what, though? I would never hold that against anyone.
No. You know what? You're right.
That's a strength.
You kind of don't want to be good at that.
Yeah. Right.
That's a kind of untrustworthy skill,
mm-hmm.
which I, by the way, have.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, because of your
because of my business,
carnival barker lifestyle.
Exactly. There you nailed it. You also.
I only said that because I wrote about Panos Panay today, and I used that term to describe him. But anyway, no, because you're a public. You know, you're out. You're because
I'm on. I was on TV,
all day long.
And so I had to do that.
Right.
I had to read a prompter. Didn't like it.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. Our show today brought to you by, I'm glad to say, a brand new sponsor, HID Global. Reduce risk, operating costs, reduce complexity by outsourcing your public key infrastructure operations to HID Global's cloud-based PKI as a service model. Oh, I love this idea. It provides automated management of the complete certificate lifecycle and encryption. It's your one-stop shop for simplifying private and public PKI management with one predictable price on one easy-to-use platform. And their simple subscription plan has no additional charges for additional certificates under your current plan. Geographically dispersed and scalable architecture across multiple regions, HID Global goes wherever AWS goes. Ease your procurement pains with HID Global. Get up and running in 2 weeks, much quicker than the competition. Their assistance with deployment always includes their incomparable white glove service expertise and knowledge. Plus, you'll receive ownership of your private keys. You keep them. For Google and Mac systems, HID's connector model of PKI uses open source certificate utilities, so your organization can use multiple operating systems, which is great for BYOD. Visit hid.link/ww today. hid.link/ww. Now we return to Mexico City and Bulgaria, where our genial hosts are holding forth. Hello, genial hosts. So, I watched with interest the Snapdragon thing, because here's the only thing I was really interested in. I knew they would say a lot of AI. They did. Mm-hmm. I knew they would talk about Snapdragon and mobile. They did. That's where Snapdragon, you know, Qualcomm lives.
Did you know they're going to spend so much time on sound chips and
other nonsense? I was a little surprised. Although Qualcomm did create the aptX.
And actually, codec. I should say, to be fair,
it's
to
quite
be
good.
Fair to them.
Yeah.
We think of them as a kind of a microprocessor company. I mean, that's not really, wasn't the initial point of the company. They make mobile chipsets.
Right.
But they started out with CDMA mobile.
Yeah, they started with radios.
And in fact, it was still very big in that.
It was the guy on stage, their CEO, who took them into the new realm of server processors, ARM processors for PCs, phones, and that kind of
thing. They have a problem, though, Leo. And that is that their major non-mobile, what I'll call CPU, it's not really the right term, efforts have all done horribly.
Well, and that's
the
what
PC
really...
PC stuff has done horribly. IoT stuff has done horribly.
I agree.
The wearable stuff has done horribly. They just announced they're replacing it with RISC-V.
Yeah.
Right, RISC-V, whatever the term
RISC-V,
is.
RISC-V, it's an open source ARM implementation, or RISC implementation.
Interesting, right?
So last time, as you may remember from last time, They promised PC grade performance with their, what was it, the CX chip they did with in conjunction with Microsoft.
One time before the CX chips, they promised Core i5 level performance, to which I replied, which generation? Because this thing,
it's not even close.
Runs like a processor from the early 2000s. Yeah. You know? It's not good.
And so I'm anything they say on stage, I'm a little suspect because
yes,
they've misled us in the past. But they did show a graph.
Love the article I wrote about this.
A very, very Apple-y graph with no axes.
Right.
No reference points saying
they're
30% faster than the M2.
At what?
At lower power, even.
At what? Doing what?
Oh.
what does that mean?
You know, we couldn't read the fine print, but I think somebody who was at the event said it was with the Geekbench single-threaded Geekbench.
Okay. So let me preface this by saying I was briefed about this ahead of time.
Oh, good.
And I have all the information I have to provide. And I got to tell you, I need to see one of these things in the real world before I get excited about this.
And by the way, it's not going to be for 6 months, is it? I mean, we're talking. Yeah.
Here's the thing: a lot of their so first of all, they refused to announce or reveal who the competitors were comparing with. Although one of those slides does say against the major ARM-based competitor, which has to be Apple, right? Which I think is where you're getting that information.
They mentioned M2, and they mentioned i7, and they mentioned i9.
Oh, okay. So they actually did this
on the slides.
In the show then. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I should mention. And it's interesting because you could see which blogs had the pre-briefing slides and which ones had the slides from the event.
Right. So they
they added the labels in the event. Yeah.
Everybody complained. And they never changed anything. They were like, yep, no, we hear you. And it's like, I am routinely, and I mean monthly, briefed by companies like HP and Lenovo. And I am briefed by companies like AMD and in Intel that make chips. And they always identify the competitor that they're,
we know who they're aimed at. I mean, they've got to compete.
Well, we do, but this is where marketing is tough because remember, this is an ARM-based chip running on Windows.
Right.
So they're in some cases, they're comparing themselves to x64 chipsets. And in some cases, they're comparing themselves to Apple. Both of those are off a bit because Apple is not running Windows, although I know it can in emulation. And x64 is not ARM. So which one are you comparing to?
Right.
When they say we offer X percent of performance and double the battery life, they're not talking about M2, but they don't say that.
Right.
And this makes me very nervous. The weird qualification, not even qualifications, the weird vagueness.
Here was
each of their claims.
My interest, and I'm sure everybody listening interest, is are we going to get Windows on ARM running on a performant processor? It doesn't have to be the fastest.
Right.
It doesn't have to even beat M2. It just has to be usable.
Well, it has to be. The other angle of this whole thing is ARM in the data center.
Right.
Yeah, but they're not. This is very.
We're clearly not there yet. But I think one of the things that we're waiting for with these later chipsets that are going to not be Qualcomm is ARM in the data center because it saves cycles. Big time. And we already can prove categorically, like the .NET devs build on Windows, deploy to Linux. They'll deploy to ARM if it costs less, like in a second.
Yep. But I mean, okay. I mean, today, yesterday's announcement was very specifically just PC, right? I mean, it is the first of a family, et cetera, et cetera. You're right. I mean, the data center is potentially a bigger market for them.
I think so, too. And I think they're doing it in the wrong order. You want to knock the bugs out of this? You want to make it properly? Sure. Make it run in the data center because you only have a half a dozen customers and they're going to crucify those chips.
So they had
you will get them wrung out.
They had HP, Lenovo, and the new Panasonic replacement from Microsoft on stage or on video saying, we're so excited. We can't wait to make Windows on ARM.
Here's the problem. Those companies have all released a small handset of ARM-based PCs already, so there's nothing new there.
Right.
Look, what Leo said up front is absolutely correct in the PC space. What this thing needs to be is a U-series competitor.
Yes.
Something for thin and light machines. Because if you can have a machine that to the average user is just about as good as any Intel chip, but the thing gets like 20 hours of battery life or 25 hours of battery life, you win, right? Assuming everything else is equal, right? And I do think
Aim it at the dev and the high-end developer and so forth.
Yes,
aim it at the regular productivity. Right?
No, there's a little, as there always has been in this market, and a little Apple envy, and I, I think that there's there's always been this kind of thing. We can do Apple silicon quality. And we should also point out that one of the reasons they're confident of this is they bought the company Nuvia that was founded by Apple's former chief chip designer. Apple sued. Sure. They eventually dropped their lawsuit because he brought a lot of people over. He was on stage too, Gerard Williams III. And so I think that that's why they're kind of saying we're better than Apple Silicon. I agree. They don't need to be.
Boy, they don't. I don't think they are going to be really.
No,
not overall. Not in V1, but they don't need to be. Right?
They don't need to.
This is the thing.
We'd be happy if they just worked well.
Exactly.
But the Surface Pro X is terrible.
Yeah, it's so close. That's the problem. You can see it, and you want. And look, this is an emotion versus logic thing for me. I want this thing to succeed emotionally.
Yeah.
Logically, I know it has not. It isn't. It's not been there. It just isn't. And I've tested so many of these machines. I've tested every version of the chipsets they've made, often on multiple PCs, and it's gotten closer. I mean, every time, there's no doubt about it, step forward. The problem is next week, Apple might release M3 chips, and the world moves on.
Apple gets an event on Monday to top this, right?
Yeah. And by the way, an event that was not on the books until what happened? Yesterday.
Yeah, interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
They were supposed to push that back, and they're like, no, let's just go now. Screw you, Qualcomm.
We got the M3.
Might be the reason it's happening, right?
I don't think they care about Qualcomm, to be honest with you.
They
sued him. Remember, what you said, what you characterized Qualcomm as a arm for network centers and radios, and a lot of people characterize him as a patent.
A patent troll.
I don't want to use the troll.
It's not. I don't either. That term
as a patent licensing operation because they invented CDMA. And people have to use their chips or at least license their technologies to make smartphones.
Anyone who believes that. So that's true on one level.
And they've been sued by everybody for charging too much.
Okay. But you go find their most recent quarterly earnings and tell me what percentage of the revenues are from patent licensing and how big that business is compared to the rest of the company. And I'll spoil the surprise. It's tiny.
Oh, interesting.
Where
do they make most of their money?
Literally on mobile chipsets.
Yeah.
they literally sell products to companies that want them. It's not about ripping people off.
And all sorts, not the big ones you know about. Everybody.
Yeah.
All the little ones. Yep. All of those little IoT devices I tinker with, they all got Qualcomm radios.
I can't. This is like the Sonos thing falls into this category. This is a company that makes products. They patent the technologies they make. We can sort of hate that on some level, I guess, but I do think that inventors should be rewarded. And in this case, it's helping them. Look, one of the reasons they can sell 5G chipsets to Apple maybe is they own patents on that stuff and they don't let other people use them without licensing them. They have the best prices, yada, yada, yada. I mean, is that wrong? I don't know.
Maybe let's face it, if you kick up enough fuss, you can get the FTC to force them to separate their licensing business from their hardware business.
Yeah, right.
Show the collusion. That is a crime. And the FTC can mandate a split. Nobody's even come close.
In the last quarter, their licensing business was $5.4 billion compared to their equipment and services of $27 billion. So you're right. It's a fifth.
Well, I mean, I look at it every quarter. I told you, it's earnings season.
You have to look at it.
One of the companies I look at.
$5 billion. None of us have $5 billion.
Yeah.
But you could just make it like...
So it's really two companies. I think it is two companies. It's a licensing company.
Okay.
And it's a hardware company.
Like Sonos in a way, not that Sonos is licensing but they would. So Sonos makes hardware that they sell directly.
Right.
And Sonos also licenses the technology so you can integrate your own products into it. Right.
Right.
This to me may be a natural process or a natural thing for a company like this to do.
I do also think that they really want to be another Intel. It's interesting AMD
might be bigger than Intel right now. Actually, that's another thing to look at. Yeah. NVIDIA is. So, listen, if this works out properly, this being this chipset, they could be Intel in the PC space, right? And Intel, actually, much like Microsoft, made some bad bets and moved too slowly in a certain direction. And now the world is running, and they're trying to catch up. They have these.
They are more
hybrid
like
designs they're doing.
Nvidia, in the sense that they're in automotive, they're in the Quest headsets, they're in mixed reality. You know, they're in radios, they're in CPUs, they're much more diversified.
This is what Microsoft did with software. So when they used to have a Windows, and then they had multiple Windows to address different markets. There's a Windows for IoT. There's a Windows for this. There's, you know, they do this different type of stuff. And unfortunately for Qualcomm, I don't know. I've seen some high profile failures there. It's a good idea. It makes sense, right? The chipset you make. Well, there's a great example. I was going to say the chipset you make for a phone doesn't make sense in a watch, right? The chipset you make in a phone also doesn't make sense in a PC. And the first one they made for a PC was a chipset right. from a phone, and it was horrible.
They're in it, they're in this process. Cristiano Amon has kind of taken this company that really the bulk of its revenue were from mobile, and yep. said we should diversify, and we're going to diversify because Apple's no longer going to use our chips. Google is no longer using our chips. Samsung still uses Qualcomm chips, but they're looking.
The problem. Sorry.
Yeah, you definitely hint repeated like they're running out of time.
Yeah,
everybody's coming in.
They got to diversify.
Now. They should be way out in the lead.
Yeah,
they're not.
I got to say though, and I'm listen, begrudgingly or not, I think anyone at any of the chipset makers on the other side of the fence, or any of the software makers on the other side of the fence, meaning Microsoft, Intel, Qualcomm, whoever you want to name, has to both respect and be envious of this thing that Apple's accomplished by making the chipsets and the software.
Yeah.
And being so successful at it, it's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, they shouldn't be this good at all of those parts.
It's kind of insane. Yeah. And then they did the transition to the Mac, which of course is what triggered Windows 11, and that happened after we were trying to move to ARM. But we'll accelerate this need to be able to meet them not just on like raw capabilities, but does this thing stay alive for 24 hours, or does it still offer the same performance as whatever preceded it? And Apple did it, and we just have not done it anywhere else.
No.
It's a
pretty unique thing. And I was impressed that they got to the second one, and I'm even more stunned to see they're going to make a third.
I think
silicon is hard.
Right. And this is the thing with this is the Qualcomm. This is the problem for the Elite X, right? So there is no doubt that this thing, as well as their mobile thing, whatever their what's the new one called? 8 Gen 3 or something? Whatever it is. Will in some ways outperform a comparable Apple silicon chipset. There's no doubt about it. The question is, and it's an impossibility, they will never outperform them across the board. They will never be better generally, right? That's the thing. You could cherry pick this. Like, here's a benchmark we won, you know? That's what they're going to be able to do.
Can they be better than Intel? Might be more relevant, right?
But again, that's no, I mean that broadly, because Intel has a, first of all, Intel, I mean, they've been the core of this market for decades, but today they have a microprocessor, a family, differentiated products, different wattages, different chipsets, architectures, and so forth. So yes, could they, listen, the first Windows and ARM PC, that little piece of junk running on the Snapdragon 850, I think it was called, or 830, whatever it was, had 24 hours of battery life, real world. It did. Is that better than Intel? Yeah, and battery life. And everything else, it was worse. So it has to be better at the things that matter. And it can't just be one benchmark or one point. It has to, you know, to be better. Like, in other words, the best thing that this thing could do, the best it could do, would be to be as good as, generally speaking, a U-series Intel processor. That's all this thing can do. This processor is not aimed at gaming rigs. It's not aimed at workstations. It's not aimed at the very low end of the market. It's aimed at a very specific part of the market. I would call it the volume part of the market, smart. Like Richard said, non-technical. Don't worry about developers. Don't worry about technical people. Worry about people. Yeah. And I think they're in the PC space, this is the right place to hit. The problem is, freaking Apple came out of the gate with this thing. It was like, but it doesn't have a dedicated GPU. Nobody cares. You know, it was kind of great across the board. You know, it's like, but the RAM is tied to the CPU. You buy, nobody cares. You know, it's hard to find that level of success. It's impossible.
Apple also looked at what the market actually did, which is they buy a machine and they use it. They never upgrade it. They never tinker with it. If they're unhappy with it, well, they get another one.
Right.
You know, they're there for that. So they went all system on a chip, integrated high as possible, max battery life, because that's the thing that affects people.
We exist in a market, you and I and us, everyone here listening, right? are in a community or an ecosystem or whatever you want to call it, where we bitch and moan because a seventh gen Intel Core processor won't run the latest version of the operating system that, by the way, none of you want anyway. What is this world we live in?
And then over on the Apple side,
there's like a little conga line going on because it's M add a number to the end of it, and everyone's excited about it, and it meets their needs, and they love it. I don't know how you resolve this, yeah. But it's very much the case that these are just two completely different markets. I don't know what else to call it. I don't know.
Well, and they've shaped that market. It's like, listen, it comes one way. Do you want it or not?
Yeah. And Apple somehow magically, the answer is always like, yeah, I want.
Yeah, I'll take two.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Take my credit card. Listen, hold on to my credit card. I will use it for nothing else.
I'm so scared.
I'm so scared.
Monday is going to be so expensive. I'm so scared.
Yeah,
I know.
They announced a black iMac, and everybody's losing their mind.
Well, Monday, I think they're going to announce some iMacs, but also apparently a MacBook Pro M3.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
With probably Pro Max. Yeah.
Would anyone have complained if they took another year? Yeah. Does this thing really need a new processor?
No, I'm very happy. I have it, you know, but this is sad. I have an M2 MacBook Air, and now I'm going, well.
Well, let me ask you a question, Leo, because you're a smart guy. Let me ask you, hold on. Is 3 higher than 2?
It's one better.
So, right? It's 50% better, right?
It is, you know, it is a 3-nanometer process. So what I've been thinking, and I may be wrong, we'll see. What I've been thinking is that 2 was an incremental improvement on 1, but 3 should be a new, because it's a new process, will be a big jump.
Or it's an incremental advance over Ultra and whatever the other
is. Right. And if it's only incremental, well, I can live with it. But, yep.
Meanwhile, we're waiting for one chip from one company. We're like, what's going on?
So you say something interesting at the end of your article that I didn't know was confirmed, which is that Qualcomm's exclusivity deal with Microsoft ends next year. There was a deal.
So the let's move into the next related topic because that's where this came from. Reuters came out with a report citing multiple sources that AMD and NVIDIA are going to make ARM-based chips as soon as this contract runs out, which is meaning for them is the beginning of 2025. We already knew that Samsung had approached Microsoft to do this as well. And Microsoft and Samsung actually have a really good partnership. Kind of wonder, like, why wouldn't they let Samsung do this? It's because they have an exclusivity arrangement with Qualcomm, which Reuters also confirmed with multiple sources. So the end of 2024 is the end of that. This chipset, this is do or die. Not for Windows and ARM necessarily, although that might be on last legs too, but definitely for Qualcomm in the PC space. Because let me tell you something, if it's bad, this company did not do well when they were the only people here, the only company in this part of the market. When AMD and Samsung and NVIDIA and maybe others are all doing this, this could be the kickstart that Windows and ARM needs. Because think about it, we basically have a duopoly now in the PC space for chips, AMD and Intel primarily, right? A wide open market in which any of these companies could do this. What if we have 5
makers
of CPUs?
NVIDIA's Tegra, which is an ARM processor, probably as a PC version. I mean, I have an old Tegra on my Android device.
On my Windows RT.
I do have an RT device somewhere. that is a hell of a processor. And it will be very interesting to see them go after the PC market. I think that's a real threat to Qualcomm. Happening. Yeah, that's a real
threat. I think so,
threat.
Too. Yeah. Now, in Qualcomm's overall, you were looking at their earnings. I mean, if you look at where they make money, it is really in mobile chipsets. Their PC business has not amounted to anything financially, unless they're being paid by Microsoft some amount of money to keep going. That is almost certainly the case. But as far as organic sales of chipsets to companies, they're doing great. Like, they're fine.
Almost all the Android phones except Google's are built on Qualcomm.
Yeah. There's an alternate future here where Qualcomm becomes the Intel of some space, which is a negative in this case because they're known for only doing the one thing, right? And they're only successful in the one thing. And to Richard's point earlier, the data center is... I think it's a bigger market than general PCs, but it's going to be a big market no matter how you measure it. And Everyone's trying to do their own custom things, but if an NVIDIA or Qualcomm or whoever could figure that out and do it cheaply enough, the big cloud providers of the world would jump on this immediately.
Yeah, I don't know if this exclusivity deal has been good for anybody. Like,
I know.
They missed the window. And I think at this point, you're basically hoping, don't ship. Mm-hmm. Let's just get over this and try something new, because it's never going to be good.
It started out bad, and it's been a slow evolution ever since. The thing is, this was true on the software side as well, but Microsoft has made big gains with Windows and ARM. In fact, aside from a minor argument to be made for users not being able to install like a driver package for a printer or scanner all in one kind of thing, right? Aside from that, which honestly most people do not need, it's pretty much there. They've done everything they can for developers, not just through going to all 64 bits and the emulation stuff that's improved in the, what's it called? ARM 64EC, I think is the name of it. This ability to create like take a classic Win32 app and make it into a hybrid app can run as effectively on ARM as it does on Intel.
And you're also seeing Windows position itself to say, you know what? We're going to do printer drivers now.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, so that
right. Tier 4 driver stuff. It's all positioning for, we're going to change the chipset. There's no way the vendors are going to jump on this. So we're going to own the problem.
Yeah, this is that's a chicken egg problem, right? Yeah. No one, HP is not going to start making ARM drivers for every single one of their printers, and there are a million of them, because for a platform that may never take off, right? So how do you...
A couple of Windows team members will make a universal driver that works for the bulk of the printers. And that's what you get.
That almost, you know, I know there was a stated reason for doing this, but honestly, you could argue that the real reason, or another major reason to do it, is that thing I just described. Mm-hmm. You can't pay. It's how much money would you have to pay to go to HP, Canon, whatever the other companies are, to support ARM? We're going to pay for it. We know no one's using it. We're going to pay for it, or we'll just take that over and we'll do it. I bet that was the cheaper
by far
choice.
The other thing that happens, because we've seen them do it, is the A team at those vendor companies works on the new product drivers.
Yeah, right.
The only team available to you to fix those older products are B teams, right? They're maintenance teams.
Right.
And you're going to get poor results that you paid for. And what are you going to do? Ask for your money back? And let's face it, like the Microsoft driver writers, like that team of people, they're extraordinary.
Yeah, right.
They have to deal with it every day. They write all kinds of drivers.
And honestly,
getting a good mandate around that is awesome.
So people don't think about this stuff too much. But when you bring up a Windows computer for the first time, it's never connected to the internet. Well, it has, because you had to, you know, Microsoft account. But it's, you plug in something with a USB cable. It could be a hard drive, a printer, scanner, whatever. It just kind of worked. It just works, right? Those are class drivers that do that. That's built into Windows. Yeah. That's what enables that stuff to work on Windows and ARM, because it's the same thing. And honestly, for most people, that is absolutely enough.
Sure.
And
have the NVIDIAs of the world in the taskbar, in the assist tray, begging you, please run our driver. Run our driver, please.
I have a computer here that I spent the better part of 2 days trying to figure out how to remove AMD software. No, not remove the software, but remove it from my right-click menus. And let me tell you something. Right. That's a hard computer science problem. They figured out a nice little way to inject themselves.
They're staying in there one way.
Yeah, it's like a tick on a dog, you know.
And nobody's going to begrudge Microsoft writing printer drivers, because the chances of that printer driver popping up and saying, hey, I'm not going to print it till you log in so I can sell you ink.
This is so HP, which I'm just familiar with. I use HP printers, for example, a variety of them. And HP has their own software. It's not actually very good, but they have something called HP Smart. And honestly, this is just something that sits on top of the drivers. So if Microsoft does the drivers and they can innovate, if you will, on the UI and the functionality and all that stuff with a utility or whatever, like a scanning app or whatever you want to call it, printing app, an all-in-one app. I mean, that's great. That's fine, right? Who cares? Why would that bother them?
Yeah.
You know, as long as the driver is exposing all the capabilities of the hardware.
Yeah, no, there's exactly one reason to bother them. It's a marketing channel to sell ink, and you took it
away. So the one thing I would, whoever's listening to this, and I apologize, but I really mean it. The one thing that bugs me about Windows and ARM is a recurring theme that pops up again and again in the Microsoft space and on this podcast, which is we think something's going to happen and it doesn't. And then we think, okay, so it's happening later than we thought. Well, when might it happen? And we point to some future milestone, right? So for example, we'll often say, well, build would be the obvious time for them to announce this thing and let's see what happens. And we wait and we build comes and it never happens. And you're like, okay, well, Ignite's coming and, you know, Ignite would be the most obvious thing. And then it doesn't happen. And it's like, we just find ourselves in this continual cycle of like, it's going to get better someday, but we don't know when. And that is to me, Windows on ARM writ large. And it's always like the next chipset will do it. The next software update. I think we've gotten over the software we have gotten by. I think the software's there, but it's always the next chipset. So like last year when they did the CX3, whatever that was called, Gen 3 or something, like, yeah, just please, like minor performance improvements doesn't solve the problem. Nuvia's it. We're going to be there. Nuvia's going to happen. They finally announced it. Here it comes, baby. 6 months. Okay, 6 months. 6 months from now, I'm telling you, it's going to be amazing. And then 6 months going to come and you'll see like one Lenovo device and one, you know, HP device. And they'll be okay. Maybe in something, you know, maybe they will get 20 hours of battery life and the performance will be like whatever. And have we arrived yet? No. Okay. But you know what? There's going to be a Gen 2. They're going to announce it in December. And, you know, and on and on we go. And I just don't like this never ending cycle of it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Hey, it's future FOMO.
Here's my question.
Terry Myerson announced, or Qualcomm announced this platform with Terry Myerson, 2016. That was seven years ago. 7 years is as long as the entire life cycle of Windows 10 so far, I think, right? Roughly, I guess actually it's 8 years, but.
Didn't it start with Surface RT? I mean, really?
Well, it sort of did. That was a different effort. I actually went with the Tegra chipset, by the way, back then at the time. But yes, I mean, that was the...
They've been doing this for a while.
They have, but you can't pretend that between RT and Windows 10 on ARM that they were actively updating it and, you know...
Well, that gets to my real question. Is Windows on ARM good enough? If, let's say, you had a good ARM processor that really was performant...
Yep.
Is Windows on ARM a good enough OS to take over?
I can answer that definitively because I've used it, wait for it, on a Mac, and it works awesome in emulation on a Mac. So, yes, it is good enough.
It's very performant on a Mac, which is hysterical.
But here, so actually, Leo, you might know some, or maybe Rich, you might know more about this than I do. One of the secret sauce successes of the Apple Silicon chips on the Mac, the M-series chips, apparently, was something about... I don't know if it was register ordering or memory ordering or
they added an instruction
to make it work like Intel, which you could imagine would in fact speed emulation, especially and aid developers in bringing their apps to the new
Apple's goal was to get Rosetta 2, which is their emulation layer, to run well enough so that you could run Intel based software
full speed roughly or you know whatever yeah. Okay, so
and they did something brilliant, which is they, and this is not going to be, well, I don't know if they patented it, I bet they did, it's probably not going to be in anybody else's ARM chips. They had an instruction to specifically support an Intel instruction that was very commonly used and really impacts performance and doesn't emulate well and by doing so They
sped this along.
A very high performance. It's why MOA runs so well.
That's what I was going to say. My suspicion is that's why Windows and ARM runs so well on the Mac. Yeah. And I'm wondering if Qualcomm, Nuvia, whatever, didn't do something similar. And if they didn't, what does that mean to the platform? Because if we're waiting for developers to explicitly support ARM in some way, by and large, that's not going to happen. I mean, it will happen. Office will do it, and you know, maybe Adobe, although why wasn't Adobe part of yesterday's show, right? You want to see some kind of support beyond just the platform maker itself. Okay, well, that's very interesting. So the Mac will always be our fallback plan. Next week, I'll be running a Mac with Windows on ARM.
Because when I first used it, there were a lot of even Microsoft apps that didn't run. But is the support now for ARM pretty strong? In applications, especially third-party applications. Don't they have to be rewritten to work on Windows on ARM?
It depends on how you built it, right? So broad strokes, we're relying on emulation. If you're actively developing apps, I mean, Microsoft will tell you it's as simple as flipping a switch in Visual Studio. You can output to ARM.
You recompile.
Yeah, well, you can, it will compile to ARM and spit out a.
Yeah, I don't know, and if you're running in Git mode with compile any, and you have the latest bits installed, it'll simply when you go to run it, it will recompile itself at that.
But it has to be a fairly modern app, I would think, for that to work. I mean, I think for the older legacy apps,
It's going to be .NET 8, right?
So it depends, right? So I guess the question would be then, obviously what you do is you don't think about that part of it because you're normal. So you go out and you buy one of these computers and you start loading Chrome on there. You start loading whatever apps you use, right? And so I think it's going to depend, you know, unfortunately. Yeah. But by and large, the compatibility is there in the sense that emulation / hybrid apps, whatever, or native apps, if you, I don't know of any. Well, no, that's not fair. Firefox has a native ARM implementation, doesn't it? And I think Chrome might too, actually, if I'm not mistaken. In the early days, they would download the 32-bit version because that would run faster. These days, they can't because 32-bit's gone, right? I don't remember. I don't remember which apps have native implementations, but there are a few. There aren't a lot.
No. I mean, there's Tor wrappers.
But again, in the market for normal people who are buying U-series Ultrabooks, right?
This would be
what kind of apps do they run? Right. I think it is kind of there, right?
So this won't
you start
be a
getting
professional...
into the Lightroom Photoshop stuff.
Yeah. This won't be a high-end professional operating
system. Not yet.
System.
No, you got to hit the basics first, right?
But maybe Microsoft, if it sees this growth of ARM and finally gets a decent desktop processor, maybe Microsoft will put more wood behind the arrow
I honestly, I criticize Microsoft more than most. I feel like they've done what they can and should do.
Yeah.
Microsoft has created ARM-based computers. I mean,
do they want to see Windows on ARM have parity with the Windows 11?
Yes. That's the yes, of course. That's the entire point of Windows 11, right? To do what Apple did with the M series chipsets for the PC space, and a big part of that's the hardware. You can't get to 25 hours of battery life and have any level of performance in the kind of x64 space.
Yeah.
It's just a hard to compromise. You have to lean in either direction. Intel leaned too far into what used to be called the megahertz wars myth or whatever. You know, remember, it wasn't too long ago, 8th gen chipsets came out. We saluted them for adding two more cores for free, you know, to the chipsets. But that's what they're good at, isn't it? They just... You know, we can do the performance stuff. It's
yeah, we had room on the die, so we stuck a couple more.
Yeah, look at it. We're heroes, you know. What they needed to be doing a long time ago was hybrid cores, I guess. You know, AMD has a fascinating way of using cores where they can be high-performant or efficient, and they can tune up and down. I don't actually know how this works, but one of the things you probably did notice in the slides was that it's a 12-core system,
There's
I believe.
There's no efficiency cores.
There are no efficiency cores.
Zero.
That tells me something, right? Without being a hardware expert, they have to have the ability to do one of two things. Either tune those cores up and down or turn off cores, either of which would have the same basic benefit of battery life.
They are doing the speed step thing, and it allowed them to kind of fool you with the numbers because they can step up to like four. I can't remember what
it's turbo. They have a turbo mode. They don't call it that.
4.3 gigahertz. Yep. That's going to use a lot more power. So they can, just as Intel does, if you're willing to sacrifice power, you know, and battery life, you can get higher performance. And I think some of those benchmark numbers were done that way.
Right. Here's the problem, though. So benchmarks are not real world.
Right.
And we're on the cusp of something very interesting. There's the AMD-based... HP Dragonfly Pro has that processor I was talking about, right? The AMD, the ability to step up and down. And what that does, and this is not the only HP computer that does this. I'm not as familiar if Lenovo does this, but they basically ignore the power management settings in Windows. You can play with it all day. It's not going to do anything. They do their own thing. You can go into there and turn it off if you want. But what they do is they turn the power up and down as needed on the fly. And if Windows is, and they're working with Microsoft, I should add, this is going to change in the future. So some future version of Windows is going to know about this, and it's not going to, you know, you could make those changes right in Windows. It will know. And I think that if this Qualcomm chipset can work in the same way, and I think it must, that Windows will know about it and it will be efficient. So yes, you're doing a Photoshop or like a Premiere video export. And for that few minutes or whatever it is, it's going to turn up the juice, spit that thing out as fast as possible, but then it's going to blow back down to something more akin to a mobile chipset. You know, and I think that's the point. I think that's, you want the power when you need it, but for the rest of the time, it should be laying low and being efficient.
Take it easy on the battery.
Yeah, and there's different ways to, I don't know anything about hardware, I'm just talking here, but I mean, there's different ways to architect the chipsets, I guess, but the net effect could be the same, and maybe that's what they're doing. I'm not really clear on this, but.
Well, and plus loads typically are bursty, right?
Right.
You run some computation and you do a render, and for 5 minutes,
you need the power.
It needs 10 times the
computer. The lights dim,
And spin up. And you hook through the battery for a bit, and then it winds back down again.
That's right. So we're already, I mean, listen, with the current gen chips we already have in the X64 space, Intel and AMD, we're right there. And this stuff would be so much better on ARM because of the inherent efficiencies if they could just get the performance in that boost state, turbo, whatever you want to call it,
right,
up to a level where we get today in the X64. And, of course, they're starting with mainstream PC form factors, so those people aren't going to be hitting those bursts too much,
right?
But eventually I think they'll get there, and I do know Microsoft's working with the PC makers to allow that kind of pass through power management stuff, so that is appearing. That's going to happen someday. Of course it will happen on Qualcomm as well, or on ARM as well, right? I don't know, it's an interesting thing. It's just that, again, this is yet another example of when will then be now. Soon.
But, I mean, these new chipsets look awesome. We're not going to see hardware until the middle of next year, which means you probably won't see it until October.
That's brutal. That's brutal. That's a brutal time frame.
And they did this dance last year, and it didn't live up to the promises.
No, not even close. It was terrible. I'm sorry. It was not terrible. It was a minor step. And the thing is, CES is kind of, look, you're missing the holidays. Congratulations. Why would they hold this event 2 months earlier than usual, or a month and a half? You're thinking, man, they're going to ship this stuff quick, right? We're going to see these at CES. And
can I also point out that almost everybody who was there because Qualcomm paid for them to be there?
Oh, yeah. Everyone, almost everyone, literally everyone.
Even PC World. Here's the editor's note in the PC World article about the Qualcomm event. To gain access to Qualcomm's new Orion and Snapdragon Elite platform, Qualcomm offered to pay PC World for room, board, and airfare. PC World accepted, but we maintain editorial control.
It's not in Oregon. It's in Hawaii. It's not a tough decision to make.
We're going
guys.
To Maui. You want to go? We'll pay your way.
Yep. I've done this, by the way. I did do it. I'm here. I'm in Mexico. I can't go there now. But who wouldn't want to go to Hawaii?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I mean, that doesn't mean you can't be
objective,
independent in your opinions, I hope.
I don't do those. I never have done junkets because I just think it's compromising, but that's me. I'm the last guy standing in this regard.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your editorial integrity. I used to work for a print publication that five people had to edit before it went anywhere.
Yeah. Times have changed.
Was the world. Now it looks, Grammarly looks at it with its stupid AI and it goes out the door.
The reason I mention it even is just people should know that and consider it. And I'm glad PC World
should be upfront about it.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely toasting you from Hawaii for your integrity.
Yeah.
Have a nice trip, Richard. I'm going to stay here in Petaluma.
That's what I think of your integrity. Let me get the umbrella out of my face.
I don't ever go to any of these events. They don't even – Apple.
Yeah.
Apple hates me so much. They didn't even invite me to watch the video on Monday.
That's awesome.
Like, everybody got invitations. It's not an event that you go
to. That's awesome.
Everybody got emails.
You know, Leo, we're reaching out to you. We want to make sure you don't watch it.
Basically, they might as well say that. Please don't watch
it. We want you to reply to this so we know what your IP is, and we're not going to let you watch
it. We have to. We can't cover these things on YouTube because Apple instantly pulls us down. So we have to actually do this little dance where when we make our shows, when it's an Apple event, we don't put it on YouTube live because they pull us down.
People maybe don't believe that institutional memory is a thing, but let me tell you, it very much, and you know this better than anybody, right? They should embrace you for what you are, and I don't understand doing otherwise. It makes no sense.
Well, what can
it's crazy.
I say? I'm not tamed.
They should embrace me for what I am. I bitch and moan about them every year. Then I buy $2,000 worth of product every fall.
I have spent so much money with Apple. It's all negative outflow. It's not. Yeah. There's no inflow.
Right.
Many years ago.
When does this AI investment pay off? It does.
Let's take a little break. Yeah. Thank God we've got advertisers. Because otherwise, I'd be doing this pro bono. I kind of am anyway. But we thank our advertisers, and we especially thank ACI Learning. They are our studio sponsors this year, which is a big deal, you know. And you may say, maybe when you saw that signage, well, who is that? Who's ACI Learning when they're at home? Well, they're IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is now called ACI Learning. And we have always loved IT Pro. We've been friends with them since they started the company 10 years ago. Now ACI Learning, and now a great way to get training in IT. ACI Learning's kept all the fun, all the personality of IT Pro TV, all the expertise and the passion of IT Pro TV. But now they have robust solutions for all your training needs. So really, it's gotten bigger and better. Your team will be entertained while they train with short-form content, 7,200 hours to choose from. And it's on demand, which means your team can train when it wants to. I know you know the name IT Pro. You've heard their ads for many years here. Now they're ACI Learning. And IT Pro's expanded capabilities provide more support for IT teams by keeping their courses updated in every area, including cloud, Microsoft, you know, Azure, AWS. They've got, they are the place for CompTIA training. Those are the certs that many people get the first time when they're trying to get an IT, like the A+ cert. But there's Security Plus, there's Network Plus. So much more. One proud tech team leader, an MSP, said, I had 110 engineers in the field. We had dozens of IT Pro accounts. Last year alone, they passed over 40 certs. Wouldn't you like that for your team? They love it because it's entertaining, engaging training. You'll love it because they're getting more skills in the areas they need to upskill to protect your company, to build your business. And I'm serious when I say that the people who are watching these videos love them. ACI Learning knows that their completion rate is 80%. That's 50% higher than the industry average. Plus, teams love the practice labs. Sure, you can use the practice labs to learn how to run on Windows and configure a Windows server and clients and all that. But you can also use it to test and experiment before you deploy new apps or updates without compromising your live system. And if you're going to take those cert exams, ACI's practice tests are a must. Prepare for the certification exams by taking the exams, by answering the questions ahead of time. It gives you the confidence when you go in. You say, I know this format. I know these questions. I'm ready. That's a great feeling. ACI Learning has a new tool, a skills gap analysis tool every team should have called Insights. It finds out where your team has gaps. It avoids redundancy in training and helps you design a training, or they'll do it with you in conjunction. They've got great people there to customize your training so that your team is learning what they need to learn and not wasting time with stuff they already know. IT Pro TV, now ACI Learning, keeps your business from risking redundancy by consistently offering the most up-to-date certifications and courses available. They provide you with a personal account manager to make sure you're not wasting anyone's time. Your account manager works with you, ensure your team only focuses on the skills that matter to your organization. You can leave redundant training behind. And they're ISO certified, that you should value that. It means you're getting world-class training, the training your team and you deserve. Keep your IT team up with the speed of technology. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. Twit listeners, you'll get a free trial and up to 65% off an IT Pro Enterprise Solution Plan. Discounts based on the size of your team. When you fill out their form, you'll get a quote tailored to your needs. That's go.acilearning.com/twit. The best tech training. go.acilearning.com/twit. Longtime partners of this show and all our shows, and we thank them so much.
So I think we brought this up last week. A YouTube channel from a former Microsoft exec or employee was publishing little clips of a Dave Cutler interview. He has since, and there was a lot of great information that came out of that, but since then, he has published the full 3-hour interview. This is required watching for everyone watching or listening to this podcast. It's hard. I'm on a weird schedule when I'm away like this, and I've been watching it in little bursts. It is amazing.
81 years old, no filter.
Amazing. And there's such neat stuff that came out of this, already, just based on the bits I've heard. A lot of, I don't know, corrective history, if you will. I mean, he, you know, obviously chief architect of Windows NT, right, for starters. Some of the things people might not be as familiar with is that he also was the person personally responsible for making the AMD X64 chipset the standard, such that
Windows.
had to adopt it, which is quite an about fit or in your face for them, I guess. He also created the architecture for the Xbox One and now the Xbox Series X and S, which is Hyper-V based. And he's working on xCloud, our project, what do you call it? Project xCloud, Xbox Cloud Gaming, you know, trying to make sense of that. And this, and we must have talked about this. I know Richard and I have, at least privately. Like, in fact, this guy is what, 81, 82, whatever.
81.
He is a sharp, he is so on point.
Famously, you know, acerbic. Like, he
He doesn't give a crap.
No, nothing to prove.
But, you know, it is astonishing. And by the way, that comes out in very interesting ways. He doesn't know. And by so this interview has triggered. I had 2 hour long conversations, nearly hour long conversations with former Microsoft executives because of this video. And yes. And
you know, they're all watching it, right?
Kind of. Yeah. They're adding color to this. Right. So one of the interesting things in the clips is you get this idea that maybe Dave Cutler didn't like Jim Allchin. And, you know, and to put Jim Allchin in perspective, this was the guy who ran Windows during the XP through end of Vista days, right? He, in the era of the, in the 90s, when NT was advancing, right, from 3.1 to 3.5, 3.5.1 to 4, and then on to Windows 2000. In that era, Jim Allchin ran an alternate version of the NT team that was making something called Cairo.
Right.
And I suspect he wasn't super happy about that. But the thing is, Cairo reached too far.
He'd just come to the company, right? Like he'd been, Microsoft had bought Banyan Bynes. He was the CEO of Banyan. And I think he drank the Gatesy and Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Like Gates loved
big vision, you know, big vision guy. Like he, you know, I love Jim Allchin. I don't want anyone to take anything I'm going to say here critically. But from Cutler's perspective, I'm sure he thought that was cute. But his explanation of this is so beautiful. He was like, fine. We'll build NT and we'll build Cairo. You guys go do what you want. But what I'm saying is I think we need to proceed slowly and methodically. And the story is basically that those guys didn't hit a single milestone, didn't deliver. They never built successfully once. And NT kept improving. And then at the end, he was like, I have an idea. Why don't we just use NT? How does that sound? And they were like, okay, you know. And then XP happened or was going to happen. And the server guys were like, we need 3 years. And the client guys were like, no, we got to do this in like 1 year. And they split the code, and the client guys never took on any of the security improvements that server added. And then when they released it, it was a cluster, and they had to recamp and do trustworthy computing and all that stuff. And so Longhorn was all based on the client code originally. And Dave Cutler referred to that as the worst software code he had ever seen in his entire life. And it was XP based, but what would have been Longhorn. And so he after this all happened, he's like, guys, I have an idea. Just throwing out something here. Why don't we use the server code base for Longhorn instead of this piece of crap XP stuff? And they were like, okay, that's probably a good idea. And he's like, and then he did the X64 right in the middle of it. Oh, and he's like, that's literally still the code base we're running on today. It's never changed. He is a god.
Legendary.
Like he is. Yeah. He is unbelievable.
Technical fellow's not enough.
No, I know, that's what I mean. Like you can't, right. There are no words to describe the other. He told this has nothing to do with him, but it was such a great story. The guy had asked why Microsoft had Xenix, right? Xenix being a version of Unix that they licensed from AT&T. I mean, Microsoft could have had Unix in 1990. Why didn't it run with that? And he says, we hated the Unix that we bought that at volume. And then at low price, Microsoft went to AT&T and said, look, what if we bought like a million licenses? Would you give us like a great deal on it? And they said, yeah, sure. So they did. And then they just resold it at higher prices and they made a huge profit on it. They sold like 8 copies of a product called Xenix, but the money they made off this thing was just licensing. It was just beautiful. Beautiful.
But why did
so many good stories? Because they didn't want it. They wanted something better than.
They got something Unix. Better? Did they get something better?
Well, so this is debatable, but in that era, you got to remember what was going on. He tells a story. He says, you know, Unix used to be a thing, was created by a place, and then it splintered, and there were different versions of that thing, many, many different versions. They were incompatible.
Oh, it's a
mess.
It's
a huge problem. Yeah. Didn't want that. So the solution in the early 90s was something called POSIX, right? We're going to have a POSIX standard. If your Unix writes to the standard, then everything will be compatible. We don't really talk about that anymore because, although I imagine Linux originally was POSIX compatible. I have no,
no
idea.
No, Linux was the technical term that Linus used was aims to be POSIX compliant.
There you go. Okay.
But isn't.
So lower your sights and deliver something
worse. We'd
like
worse, to, you know? But we're not.
So to your question, I mean, the thing that Unix had going for it at that time was it ran on RISC processors, right? Which Microsoft did see to be the future, which is why they did NT. I think if they had gotten, if they hadn't gotten David Cutler, there's a pretty good chance they would have gone for Unix, right? But David Cutler was.
Cutler is the ultimate manifestation of the not embedded here syndrome. He would rather.
I was going to say anti-Unix, but yeah, that's exactly right.
He wants to write it all.
That's right. So you will understand in what, listening to him speak that he can write it all and did. And if you haven't read Showstoppers, right, we talk about this, you know, read this book. NT was an answer to Unix. It was the NT team's response to Unix. And what I mean by that is they looked at Unix and they picked the things they liked and used those or implemented things like that. And there were a lot of things they didn't like and they did things differently. Unfortunately, some of those things, like I think we can look back and say, you know, honestly, using plain text files for configuration isn't a horrible idea and, you know, whatever. But, Richard knows Jeffrey Snover very well. I mean, this came much later, but a PowerShell as a kind of response to a bash shell or whatever.
Yeah.
We like a lot of what you're doing here, but we want to shoot for some sort of .NET style object oriented consistency or whatever. And make something that's a superior product. So both of those things to me were like responses and they tried to improve and I guess we could debate whether they ultimately succeeded, but the Windows code base has done pretty well. And it's been all NT based since 2001, right? It's in Xbox now, it's in the cloud, it's in Azure. It's doing okay. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do when he leaves.
So he's actively coding still? I mean, he's actively.
He is literally actively coding.
Wow.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Neat. It doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense. He can call up memories of architectures from the past that haven't existed for 3 decades and explain why they did or did not go with this design. And you got to listen to this talk. It's crazy. He has no memory at all. None for products. He couldn't tell you the name of Windows XP Service Pack 2 if you tortured him, but he can tell you the exact opcodes and, you know, like his disdain for some product that's marketed to users is so wonderful and hilarious. The only time he referred to XP Service Pack 2 that I've seen so far, which was part of that trustworthy computing thing, right?
Yep.
When he referred to it as a 235 megabyte code dump. And it was under 256, whatever the number was. And that's how that in his brain, that's all that was.
It was Alchin's distraction, right? That's where Alchin was focused while Longarm was going off the rails under Valentine.
But they had to because
they
screwed the pooch with security. Yep. So they did. And that's when the server code base took over. And that's one of those, I don't remember if it was you and me, Richard. I was just talking to somebody about this, this notion that's gone up and down over the years, whether the Windows code base should be sort of controlled by the server, the client group, and tied to that, whether the development part of Microsoft back in the day, DevDiv, should be part of which of those groups or separate, right? Which is the other approach. It was all politics driven, like whoever had the most power at the time, you know. Server took it from Alchin. Snofsky took it from server. And who knows what's happened. It's a different world.
In the
now,
cloud.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's all. And actually, that's a good point. Actually, it is cloud. So Jason, who's the guy in Azure?
Jason Zander.
Jason, I can't think of his last name. I'm sorry. He came up out of the server group and I think is in Azure. And he brought over for a time, the development of Windows is in like a cloud group, which, you know, if you approached it without knowing the history, you'd be like, wait, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And it's like, no, let the adults handle the core of the operating system, please. They got this. Jason, what the hell? I can't
believe it was it. Zander.
Zander, thank you. Yes, Jason Zander. I get stuck on things. Like, I know a guy named Jason Boberg he used to work with, and his name was in my head, and then I couldn't get to Zander. So
there you go.
Yep. Yep, I'm sure that's a psychosis.
Some names don't lead to the last name. Like Jason could be so many things. You say Letitia, and you know who you're talking about.
But right, okay.
But Jason, nice, okay. What could that be? It could be a million.
A lot of Jasons.
I know five Jasons. Lisa's hysterical because right. She'll say, oh, Jason said this. And I said, okay, but which Jason? There's many.
We had my son brought over a friend who had just moved in across the street. And I said, what's your name? And he said, Connor. And I said, no, that's not going to work. Mark and his three friends named Connor. You were going to be called Frank.
We named so, Henry when he was a kid. We named him Henry because we thought, oh, he'll be the only Henry. There were seven Henrys in his class alone in elementary school.
That's funny.
So he became Hank, which is actually a pretty good name. Yeah.
Okay. I joke with my son's name is Mark, and I wanted a simple name because our last name is horrible to pronounce and spell. And so people are like, oh, that's great. And then I'll say, of course, I spell it Marque, you know, just to screw around.
I went to school with a guy who spelled Mark Marcqk.
Oh, come on.
No, really?
Yes. This is no good. What do your parents do everything phonetically? What is that?
They really wanted a hard ending. Mark.
Oh, that's a hard ending, all right.
Mark.
When's the last time I'm talking to you, buddy? Jeez. That's tough.
Let's see. Do we have some beta builds here?
We do. Yeah, not too many, oddly. There was a beta build to the Insider Preview channel last week. Couple of changes. We talked about this, I think. Right? We did, yeah. The system component thing. Remember they're kind of dividing that up? So in the start menu, I guess they're going to put a little system badge next to system components for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they're bothering with this. Nobody sees or cares about this stuff. But anyway, Microsoft is hot on something here. So they're doing that. The Xbox Game Bar is being renamed to the Game Bar. I actually already see this. So in my, I guess I'm on release preview. I see that.
You're on the early rotation for this.
Yeah, they don't do anything in order. So that's happening there. Same thing with the casting, the new casting experience, which I've not actually experienced yet. That has come to the beta channel. And I guess actually that's it. So not too much, right? There was a new Canary build right before we started the show. I know we're all so excited and don't be because nothing new is happening. We always Windows think this 12, is going to be Windows 12. It's going to be nothing yet. So they just got Copilot in the latest build of the Canary.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I know. It's so weird. Speaking of which, I should have written about this.
That's not a Canary thing, right? Copilot's elsewhere. Like what?
I don't know. So I was, I don't know why I was doing this. I was using Microsoft Edge. There had to have been a reason. I don't usually. And I noticed there was an update, so I updated it. And in that update, the Copilot icon has occurred, right? Remember, they showed it at the September event, but it hasn't been in the browser. So if you have Edge, try this. It's not on every computer because Microsoft, but I've seen it on two computers now. Let me look on this one to see if it's there. It is. Yep. So it's on this computer. And interestingly, if you run Copilot in any version of Windows 11 now, if you have it and can run it,
right.
I know it does. It says it's a preview, right?
Okay.
And the version that's in Edge now is not, it doesn't announce itself as a preview. It's just Copilot with Bing Chat. So I don't know what that means, but the icon's different and it happened and there was no announcement and I don't know. So
things have just changed again.
Yep. So that's that. You don't have to talk about the field guide. I'm updating the book. Nobody cares.
OneDrive.
Yeah, OneDrive. We got to talk about this. So this I'm gonna throw a rhetorical question.
Why is this going so far off the rails?
I have moaned about this over the past few weeks or whatever. I'm sure you're all tired of it. I am here to let you know it just got worse, and. I'm not going to recap the whole thing, but the last development was that Microsoft was silently enabling folder sharing in OneDrive after I had said no to it during setup and had gone into the product and turned it off, depending on the computer and or I should say not that. So what happens is I'll delete a file from my desktop is the usual way I find this out. And it says, hey, did you know? When you delete stuff from OneDrive, something happens. And I'm like, hey, did you know that my desktop is not in OneDrive? What the hell's going on? And what they've done is they've silently...
You were wrong.
They silently turn on folder backup. I can't stand this. Yeah. So, okay, that's bad, right? Everything I talked about before stands. It's all happening still. It's terrible. I don't like what's happening. This is all... I think of this as the coming 23H2 problem. Okay. Because right. most of you are going to hit this when you upgrade to this version of the OS. That's when you're going to see the problems.
I mean, but you'd hope that they'll have this fixed by then.
Fixed? That's funny, because that you're suggesting this is a problem. Oh, right. So like here's the thing. Yeah. Yeah. So the way this has worked to date, whether it was doing this maliciously or not or whatever, is that you go into OneDrive, you go into settings, OneDrive settings, you navigate to sync and backup, mm-hmm. you click on manage backup, and you see what it's doing. And from this interface, you can turn on or turn off folder backup for five folders, right? Documents, pictures, desktop, music, and videos. And why those are not alphabetized, I don't know. I have ADD, so that bugs me. But anyway, when it turns this on for you automatically, it's only three of the folders. Yeah. It's documents, pictures, and desktops, like the important one, desktop, the important ones.
Okay.
All right. So in the past, when I clicked on the toggle to turn off one of those things, you'll be surprised to know it turned off those things. That's how it worked. So you went wow. click, and okay, and you were out. So okay. you call it, I guess, four steps. I don't know, however you want to count. Here's what it does now. Totally different. How many steps do you think it is now, Richard? If you had to guess, how many steps?
I'm sure they've increased it just to up the front.
They have absolutely increased it. So here's what happens. You click toggle off on any one of the folders and it says, are you sure you want to stop backing up? This is important. We like to back up. And you're like, yeah, I'm sure.
Let me help you.
There's one extra step. One extra step. Then it says, okay, but here's the deal. You have files in that folder. What do you want us to do with them? This is actually kind of interesting, right? Because anyone who's done this in the past knows. It puts us to date. It has put a shortcut in the folder that says this is where your files are. Because if you think about it, your files are in OneDrive. You've said, I want to use the local folders. It didn't move anything around. It just went to the local folder.
Right.
So in the local folder, it would say, hey, do you want to know where your files are? Here's where they are. Now they're actually giving you a choice. So the first choice is don't do what you're doing. Stop this madness. Let us back
up. What we want you to do.
Yep. Or you could put it in OneDrive. Or you can put it in the computer. So actually, I appreciate this choice, although it's a nicety that comes out of them doing something terrible.
But it also feels like they phrase it in a way where you're going to be unsure enough that you're going to say, okay, I'm
sorry. It's super confusing. Yep.
Yeah, it's designed to make you uncertain.
Yep. It's definitely socially engineered. But this is the second step.
But we're not done yet.
So you make a choice. I don't care what you chose. You continue, right? Well, actually, you could cancel, but I'm going to say you continue. Then it pops up a thing that says, hey, we stopped backing up this folder. Oh, okay.
I hope you're happy.
Right. I mean, that's what the toggle would have told me that, but okay. So there's three steps.
Yeah.
Now, multiply that by all. Oh, I'm sorry. There's one more. Sorry. Then this is beautiful. It pops up a feedback screen. It's a big one. And it says, hey, why are you doing this? And it gives you all these reasons you can choose. And you can write a little thing in there.
No.
Right.
So there's four. There's four steps. This is just for one of the three choices.
Don't worry. So, we're going to ask you about Chrome next.
Yes.
You know what I do?
So four times three.
I uninstall OneDrive completely.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So look, if you encounter this and you don't like this like I don't, please do take the time to provide the feedback. I mean, they need to hear this, but they're not listening to me, that's for sure. So I've just described four steps. Times three is 12. We're not done. We're not done. The second you disable any folder from backing up to OneDrive, two other things happen. So the total is, 14 steps. 14 extra steps. The first one is their OneDrive icon gets a little bing, a little bang icon, a little overlay.
Right. Oh, no, something bad is happening. You've made poor choice.
Oh, my God, what is this? So you finish doing all your OneDrive folder backup configuration. You close it all down. Now you're like, what's wrong with OneDrive? And it pulls up this little window. And it's a little overlay inside of the OneDrive thing. It says, you know, there are some ways that Microsoft OneDrive can make you more efficient. Click here to get started. Guess what it does? It turns on folder backup. Yeah. That's not it. It also, simultaneously to this, pops up a banner notification at the bottom of the thing. And this is what it says. Get to know OneDrive. Learn how to protect your files using, wait for it, folder backup. You know what? This is a family show, and I'm not going to say what I'm thinking, but are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like if you thought I was exaggerating before, let me tell you something. Microsoft called my bluff and
they leveled up.
They're going to town. So the only caveat to all this I will say is, and Richard sort of suggested this earlier on, maybe they'll fix it. Maybe they will have enough bad feedback from this. Maybe.
How many bags of flaming dog poop do we need to put on store steps?
It is comical to me that if you had said to me last week, after I'd written all the stuff I'd written about this, that Paul, you're just wait. It's going to get way worse than this.
Oh, sweet,
it's going to get way worse than this next week. I would have been like, there's no way.
They've been planning for it. It's in a milestone.
This is malicious. Mm. This makes me crazy. That makes no sense. So yeah, I mean, and Leo said it, you know, yeah, I mean, this is the type of thing that drives people to be like, I give up. I can't do this anymore.
I'm going to box, you know.
Yeah, like, I can't do this anymore. And I maybe to be fair to Microsoft, people in the drama here, people lose sight of something, which is that I do know and believe that OneDrive folder backup is the best solution for a lot of people, normal people. It's like a helmet law for motorcycles. It's saving people from their own stupidity. That you might reset a computer or something bad happens. And you know what? Don't worry about it. All your important stuff is up in the cloud. And I 100%. But the flip side of that is that's not true for everybody. and there are technical reasons why they wouldn't know why, but there are reasons why you wouldn't want this doing this. If I look at my, this is different on this computer. When I wrote this article, I looked at my documents folder, which is a local folder. I don't use the documents folder, but there are several folders in here. From Adobe, Microsoft, something called New Blue FX, Obsidian Vault, Scan Documents, Zoom, all kinds of stuff. And on this computer, that takes up 1.2. I don't want that stuff syncing to the cloud. And by the way, those applications don't respect that. They'll overwrite it on every computer because they don't recognize the whatever the thing that brought up came over from a different computer. And I like, if I'm not paying for this, that's 1.25, whatever I said, of 5 gigabytes of storage that I get from Microsoft free. You're sucking up my storage with stuff I don't need.
Yeah, it's and stuff I didn't ask for.
But it's not just that. The bigger issue for me, and this is for me, but it really is for anybody who has decisions to make and wants their decisions to be respected by a thing that is a tool. I explicitly went into this and turned this off.
Yeah.
In this case, twice. And you keep turning it on. You're not respecting my decision. This is what they did with Edge, right? When they at first did not allow you to configure a default browser in Windows 11, and they got so much complaints, they put a little default thing that only did some defaults. And then you do certain things like search highlights or widgets or whatever, and it still launches Edge. That's what Redbacks. This is. This is intuitification. It's nonsense.
Well, yeah. You said backup. You didn't mean backup.
Yeah, I mean, geez, it's insane. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go off on a rant there, but I never in my wildest dreams would have thought a week ago that this could have gotten worse again. This
kind of impressive, really.
No, even given my entire 30-year history at Microsoft, I never saw this coming.
I can't wait for next week.
That's maliciousness at scale. It's astonishing, you know? Good for them. They can move fast.
Paul, are you going to take all your Windows PCs and throw them out the window?
Here's the truth.
Bury them in the dark.
Seriously, people will ping me on Twitter or email and they'll be like, tell the truth. Like, if you weren't doing what you're doing, like you'd use a Mac or a Chromebook or something. It's like, no, actually I wouldn't. I really do prefer Windows for all kinds of reasons. And God knows Microsoft's doing everything they can to undermine that. But as of today, still, I mean, 30 years in, whatever. No, I very much prefer Windows. I use Macs fairly regularly. I mean, I keep, you know, I test it and I do stuff. And I never once, after a few minutes, like, man, this is, I really want to go to this.
I don't know why I'm wasting my time. I got to live here. Yeah.
Yeah, never. That never happens to me. So, no.
Bring me the walled garden. I want to live happily.
But I'm also, despite all the years, it still bugs me so much when things don't work. And I don't understand.
How did
it's astonishing. It could be anything. You're on your phone and this thing pops up and you're like, no. And you're like, why isn't it? What you know, it's like, is this designed not to tap? It's not just Windows, right? It's everything. Yeah. But this is my life. I mean, this is what I cover. This is what I write about. This is where I live. And does Google and Apple, they do terrible things? So, yeah, I'm sure they do. I don't care. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about Windows.
Nice.
And that was Paul Thurrott's Microsoft Cloud Show Corner. Join us next week as Paul finds something else that's driving him nuts.
Right. Also, I would I would like things to work. And I would like there to be a show or a day or whatever where I can show up and be like, yeah, everything's great. A show that would be.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Everything's working great.
But no,
here's some Microsoft stuff I can just recommend wholeheartedly because it's awesome.
It works.
I'd love to be able to do that.
That's clip champ.
I want that. That's my goal.
Yeah.
The passive aggressive stuff is not working. I guess I don't know how I escalate this, but I don't know. Anyway, all I can do is respond. I mean, I'm not inventing this stuff. It's just happening. So not my fault. Okay.
We're gonna keep this particular sticker around, Joe Esposito.
Okay, yeah, you're getting it. Well, you're gonna need it.
Sticker wizard. <Thank you. laughs>
So, over a period of a month or so, we've learned that Microsoft is cutting off the use of Windows 7 and 8.1 product keys, right, for activating Windows 11. And
they finally did it.
They did it. It kind of blew me away. The Verge had the big story. Microsoft confirmed it. These keys no longer work in Windows 11. I'm like, neat. So I read the article and I was like, what about Windows 10? You know, actually, I think this came up last week on the show. Someone said, what about Windows 10? No, The Verge never bothered to try it in Windows 10. They only tried it in Windows 11. So I tried it in Windows 10. And yeah, it doesn't work anymore. So it's over.
It's over.
All right.
I can confirm that it is over. So.
Oh, that's sad.
Whatever kind of key you have, it does not matter if it was for Windows 7 or 8.1. It will not work. There is one little, I'm not going to call it a controversy, but more of a question, which is, what about those people who have, what do they call them when you activate? You did activate, and now you have a digital license, I guess,
right?
That's associated with your Microsoft account.
Right.
Microsoft's very clear on this. That will not change. It's not like this rule now retroactively eliminates your activation. However, I have heard from two people now who have said, actually, I reinstalled Windows, and it didn't come up. It didn't activate and wouldn't. And that I cannot explain. So, I can't say that this is a universal problem yet. I have not experienced it, and I can't base anything on two people out in the world. I mean, these, you know, people are people, whatever. They might not know what they're talking about. So if this does happen to you, A, I would like to hear from you, right. And B, you should just call Microsoft support and explain this, because they will activate this.
Every time you go after them and they're willing to explain, they go, here's a key.
Yep. I need to know more, but yeah, like I said, if it happens, let me know, because this shouldn't happen ever, but I twice, so who knows? Okay. Oh boy. Yeah. Starduck turned 30. Sorry.
30 years old?
30 years old, yeah.
So what?
Starduck, wow. Brad Wardell started this company in 1993.
Holy cow.
Interestingly, the same year I moved to Phoenix to start my own little career here, and he was an OS2 guy, right? So him and I have often reminisced about those days. I have what I think is a great interview with him, not because I wrote it, but because he's interesting, and I recommend reading it. Just a couple of points, though. They started off as kind of a business or enterprise company, right, for OS2 customers. And they figured out how to skin windows. And window blinds was the biggest thing in the world for a little while.
Yep.
And now they're kind of back on the enterprise bent because their most successful products, like Start 11, and fences, and I think there are KVM switcher, which are mostly through volume licenses for businesses, right? So they've kind of come full circle. But the conversation that came out of that is, why is the skinning stuff not so interesting anymore? And there are two big things that come out of this. One is that, first of all, Windows is now architected in such a way that this is much harder. But the other thing is phone, right? The iPhone happened in 2007. And Android and iPhone took off since then. And that's where people spend that. This is where we do those things. We sit there, we customize the phone. Nobody gives a crap about the PC. They turn it on, they leave all the defaults, and they get work done and they leave. And he was saying,
it's not that personal anymore.
Yeah, they don't care anymore. And people don't care. Yeah, they're not going to stick around to personalize it. He says, you know, he has all these products that they sell that don't really sell anymore. They're still kind of fantastic, including some I'd never heard of, like an icon. An icon thing with themes, which is part of that whole object desktop thing. And he's like, this product is sitting there. It's fantastic. It still works great. And nobody wants it, you know, because we've all moved on to phones.
That's your personal device now.
Yep. So anyway, I love that guy. I always have. I've known him for 25 years, easy. I've always loved
him. And
he's
still the CEO. That's such a good story.
He's the sole owner. It's a small business, basically. I mean, he actually has hundreds of customers and contractors.
So he started with OS2 Essentials.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, you say in the interview, he says he started doing what Michael Dell did, building PCs in his college
dorm
room.
Just not successfully. Read the story about how he named the...
Everyone
should read it. How he named the thing.
He panicked and named it.
Yeah. He panicked, named it. He looked at a book that was open. It was a Raymond Feist book, I believe it was, one of the fantasy novels. And he just saw the word and he said, Starduck, you know, and systems, because everything IBM did was systems back then. Remember personal systems and
that's awesome.
OS2 personal systems. Yeah. OS 2 actually was operating systems 2.
Right. Everything at Apple.
That was,
Apple,
IBM, that was their branding was at the
systems,
time.
Systems, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. One more little mini controversy. This is one I will not get excited about, but
I read this.
So, of course you did, because everyone in the world was like, oh my God, Satya Nadella just said that his biggest regret was killing Windows Phone.
Yeah.
And I was like, really?
Yeah.
So here, a little bit of background on this. His two successors, the CEO at Microsoft, Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates, both said exactly the same thing at one point, separately. And I wrote articles saying, no, this was not your biggest mistake. This is the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life. And so when he did this, the third, like the three of three, are you kidding me? For the next CEO to do this, they'd have to bring it back and then kill it. Like everyone who was around says this was their biggest mistake. So this interview, which is 7,300 words long, he never says that. That's not what he said. In fact, what happened was the guy said, what's your biggest regret? And he told a story about, he said, my biggest mistakes were all about people. He said, I made many biggest mistakes. It's not just one. I made mistakes about people. And then he said, do you mean by not picking the right people or keeping the wrong people? And he said, yes.
Yeah.
By which I think he meant both, right? Yeah. That was the biggest thing.
Yeah.
So then the guy, he pressed him again. He said, but what about your biggest mistake, like as a decision or whatever? And this is what he said. The decision I think a lot of people talk about. He didn't say it was his biggest mistake. It was the one people talk about. It was a difficult decision.
I do get the sense that he regrets not having a mobile platform today.
Of course. Yeah. But here's the problem. So I wrote a whole big piece on this. I'm not going to reiterate the whole thing, but here's the thing to remember. By the time he came to be CEO in 2014 and Microsoft had just acquired Nokia, this platform had already failed. It failed. He actually killed it about a year later. Didn't tell anybody in the outside world.
The line was, we're not going to chase markets anymore.
Yeah, right. One of the other things he did when he came in as CEO of Microsoft was to be very pragmatic about the various businesses and products that Microsoft had. And he went to all the different product teams. And the basic deal was like, look, and this is why Windows Phone got killed. You need to be profitable on your own. You have to make sense as a business. We're not subsidizing anything here. Or you have to have some plan in some short period of years to get to that point. And Windows Phone did not have the answer for this. There was nothing there. So he killed it. But this makes me wonder about a couple of things.
He didn't really just kill it. He got rid of Elop and the entire group all the way down.
Right. He laid off. Right. That, right. So I've told the story many times, but when Terry Myerson left Microsoft, I asked him a bunch of questions, but one of the questions I asked, because remember that guy had gone from being what I would call a normal middle-aged man in shape and size to a very skinny, we used to joke that he looked like a kid from a boy band, you know? So I said, Terry, how did you lose so much weight? And he says, well, I took over the Windows division and Satya Nadella told me, and I was going to fly out to greet all the new Nokia guys. And Satya said, between you and me, we're going to be laying off all those people. And so you have to go, but you know, they're all going to be gone.
Oh my God.
And he went over there like sick to his stomach.
Oh yeah.
So he spent the next year to just full on stress, freaking out because he had to do this horrible thing. And I was like, Terry, I can't fire Nokia. How do I lose weight? And he said, oh, just eat less and walk more. And I'm like, useless, just like useless.
So nobody who hasn't had to fire people has any idea.
Yeah. He lost weight. How horrible all the stress it is. Around how horrible. Yeah, that's exactly what. Yeah.
It is the worst, especially a lot of people.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you want to put a blame on mobile, what you have to do is go back to 2012, which is years before he came on board as CEO. And the decision that Synofsky's team made, where they were doing this great work over Windows Phone, and instead of making those things compatible, he just made them similar. And he made two separate platforms. And there was a lot of hardware rev going on in the Windows Phone space, you know, Windows CE backend.
Devs twice. 7 wasn't compatible. 8
wasn't three times, ultimately, because 10, same thing, right? So a different platform, I mean. But with Windows 10, they finally had the right idea, which was the idea they should have had honestly, as long ago as 2009, when the planning first started, which was to make that one Windows platform they had belatedly.
Well, that was the thing. After they'd done it a few times, like, hey, developers really hate it when we deprecate their stack.
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't do that anymore. We'll make that was one the, that was vertical the, platform.
Yep, that was the inflection point or whatever you want to call it, where they screwed up. That was where they lost mobile. If they had made a single platform that worked across tablet, PC, and phone in 2012, they would have had something. But the problem was, not only did they not do that and wait 3 years, but they revved everything and they forced developers to start over. And by the time they had, they switched it to Windows 10 Mobile, right? And they had Windows 10.
That was also the abrupt Sadovsky departure, the sort of unraveling of that whole team. Yeah. Like, you can't blame anyone for having no good strategies in 2012. The place was on fire.
Right. I was right. I'm when I say 2012, that was when it was announced. I mean, it really should have happened. It was 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
And what should have happened is that the Windows and phone team should have gotten together, done this thing together, had the same UI, and the Windows version of this API, SDK, whatever that is on phone would have been a superset of what was on phone. And if you had a phone app, it would have run on Windows as a little phone shaped thing, right? And people would have made hybrid apps. This was eventually the strategy. This was universal app, the one Windows, thing, whatever you want to call it. Remember Office, we talked about this fairly recently, was going to move to this platform. And if you ran it on a phone, you got the Office app we still have. And if you ran it on Windows, you get the full app. And it would stretch out.
Those were the promises that kept Office or iOS Android on the shelf and for years.
This is the part of the quote where he actually says this. Again, in retrospect, I think there could have been ways we could have made it work by perhaps inventing the category of computing between PCs, tablets, and phones. Exactly what I just described, exactly what they did do belatedly in Windows 10, and exactly what the thing, if they had done in 2009 to 2012, might have been successful. This was not on him. He didn't say it was his biggest regret. It is absolutely not his biggest mistake. And everyone, I mean, the problem is we've got this community of people who are still like, oh my God, I still miss Windows Phone so much, you know? And it's like, yeah, no, they were onto something. There's no doubt about it. I stuck with it longer than I should have. Mm-hmm. But whatever. And, you know, you have people to this day, and I mean, literally, you're like, oh, I could still take better pictures on my Lumia 1020 than I can from, you know, whatever. It's like, no, you can't. Sure. No, you can't. And to prove that, I will walk slowly across the room and you take a picture of me and it will be blurry. Because if anything moved, it couldn't do it. It was that slow. Even in 2013, when it was brand new, it was slow. Pictures were beautiful. I mean, no doubt about it. But let's not let nostalgia get in the way of reality here.
Yeah, it is nostalgia.
Yeah. So anyway, my only point here is everyone reported this story, and I'm like, wow, I'm really surprised he thinks that. And then I read it, and I'm like, he didn't say that. And this thing is like, it's 7,000 words long. This incredible, someone asked, the same guy. The interviewer asked him at one point how he felt about being the anti-Ballmer, you know, and meaning like they're completely different personalities. The types of people who would have loved Steve Ballmer were not super enamored of this guy, right in the beginning, especially. So there's a lot of stuff in there. It gets into all the cricket nonsense no one actually cares about that he always talks about, or, you know, whatever. It gets into consciousness and AI, of course, and deep topics. And this phone thing?
Why is that the headline?
This is what our community is all about. It's all about dredging up this crap and pretending that, you know, if only they just kept it going.
But if I rephrase it to being Nadella... Yes. Wishes they had a mobile platform today. You wouldn't.
Yeah, we all do. I do too. Yeah. But they could have done it.
Right.
I'm not saying it would have dominated or it's
over. Because we didn't really talk about it, but they killed Duo, right? I mean, they didn't announce the death of Duo, but
that's the way they kill things. So that's the way they killed Windows Phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, that might be the way they're killing Surface right now, and this is something that came up in this article actually, and I think in some of the earnings stuff. When they killed Windows Phone internally, they didn't announce it to the world. But here's what they did announce. We're refocusing Windows Phone. And Windows Phone, people might forget, started as actually a consumer platform, which a lot of Microsoft guys were a little confused by. Like, what are you doing? Like, why wouldn't this be all Exchange and, you know, that kind of stuff? And they added that over time, obviously. At the very end, they supposedly were refocusing on the enterprise. And they did it first party a little bit, but remember the last... Maybe last ever Windows Phone was that HP Elite X3, which had the docking station and the keyboard and the laptop dock.
Yeah, and sort of ubiquitous computing. It'll work anywhere.
It's this idea that Satya Nadella was talking about in the interview. It's a great idea. 3 years too late, but, you know, a really good idea. And so the refocusing announcement we just got from Surface was not an announcement. Remember, it was more of a leak. Panel spinning left because of this, and we're not going to let you do the crazy devices anymore, which includes Duo, right? Which they've not announced. We're focused on the basics. And I think that might be, it might be, I'm not saying it is, but it might be the first step toward, okay, we're getting rid of this.
Now, when I hear refocusing, I think refocusing on the horizon as you fade away.
Right.
You know, that's.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We're going to focus on a horizon where you aren't,
yes.
You know, that kind of thing. So we'll see what happens there. I hope not.
The equivalent of taking the pet upstate. It's over.
Oh, yikes. There are rabbits. He won't be, you know, he'll be okay.
He'll be fine.
Anyway, that's it. So I was just surprised how many people wrote about it, how many people were tweeting about it. Some of the old Windows Phone guys came back. So like, see, I told you so. And it's like, you clearly did not read this interview. This is not what he said. There was a future. And you asked if they could do it again. Duo I feel very strongly that Microsoft, if they're going to make devices, they should make Android devices that run Microsoft 365.
Yeah, that
I actually
makes
think
sense.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Duo conceptually, I mean, forget the dual screen bit of it, but the notion of a Duo device, it's not quite a phone, but it opens up and is this bigger screen and can do stuff, is not a horrible one. Because it's not going to be the same platform, Microsoft has to figure out some way to have those apps that make sense on wherever you are. And, you know, web and mobile are the ways, and there are different ways to handle this. It's not going to be a Windows device, I guess. Could they be successful, whatever that means, in mobile? And I don't know. It's getting harder and harder. When they announced Duo in Neo, which never came out, I remember Frank Shaw came up to me and said, let me ask you a rhetorical question. If Microsoft could make this device and not lose money, would that be okay with you? You know, in other words, would that satisfy my complaint that it doesn't just sit there and lose money? And I said, yeah, of course. And then I was like, can it do that? And he's like, I'm not saying it. You know, I mean, it's a rhetorical question. But that's the goal with hardware, right? You're making money somewhere else, maybe through a Microsoft 365 subscription or a Razor Blade or whatever your business is.
I was always making an M365 phone made a lot of sense.
Yeah. You know, I think a Microsoft 365 device does make sense. And I don't think it should matter what it runs as long as you have access to your data and the apps that you want to use, right? That's who cares what it runs? Android's a great choice.
And then you have a company device separate from your personal device, which makes life easier.
Yeah.
They have total control of it because they should. It's their device.
Yeah. And also anyone who's used PhoneLink knows the complexity potentially of marrying those devices that we have today through your PC. Especially on an iPhone where it's very limited. And Intel has something called, it might be called Unity. Something like Unison maybe. Which they bought the company. This is something Dell used to put on their computers, which actually does a little bit of a better job of integrating with an iPhone, right? Than PC Link or PC Phone Link does. The problem is you can't just go get it. You can't buy it. You have to buy a computer that happens to have it on there. So I have it on some select HP computers is where I've seen it. And it is a little better, but it's hard. I mean, I think everyone wants that little unification piece. I'd love to be able to type text messages on my computer because I type better there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely save work for the big screen and the good keyboard.
Yep. By the way, if you use Google Messages, there's a web app which works great. You can use that just for messages. It only works for messages. It doesn't do phone calls.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's that little bit of myth busting thing. And we had a bunch of Xbox stuff up front, but there's one more, which is just, I wouldn't normally talk about an ad campaign, but Microsoft is reviving one of their better received ad campaigns called Power Your Dreams for the holidays. It starts tomorrow night as we record this one. NFL has the Thursday Night Football. You're going to start seeing them there. And the reason I mention it is because now it has Activision Blizzard stuff going on in it, right? So it's they're commingling the different studios all in one. There'll be a series of them, I think, but in one ad, you'll see all of the games together. Microsoft kind of doing their first big marketing push for the Activision Blizzard.
We own Activision.
Yeah. We are the champions. Yeah. So anyway, the ads are pretty cool.
Nice.
By the way, I didn't mention this, but Satya Nadella was on screen in an interview at the Snapdragon event with the CEO of Snapdragon. What I found interesting is he managed to avoid completely mention of Surface based on Qualcomm or anything.
Right.
And just talked about AI the whole time. And it was the same AI speech you've always heard. Right.
That Windows Phone thing we just talked about. Yeah. He also never used the term Windows Phone there. Which is very interesting. And like I said, they never mentioned Surface once in their earnings announcements, during or after.
God, wow, interesting.
I know. This is not the first time, by the way. This is not new. So it doesn't necessarily mean anything new, but it's I always look for this stuff, and it's concerning.
All right, so. That was the shortest Xbox segment ever. You took me completely off.
Yeah, well, remember we did a bunch up front.
So let us take a break because the back of the book is coming up next. But right now, a word from our sponsor, the great folks at Wix Studio. Web agencies. Oh, you're going to like this one. Let me tell you about Wix Studio, the platform that gives agencies total creative freedom to deliver complex client sites while still smashing deadlines. How? Well, let's start with advanced design capabilities. With Wix Studio, you can build unique layouts. With this revolutionary grid experience, you can watch as elements scale proportionally by default. No code animations, add sparks of delight, while custom CSS gives total design control. But it doesn't stop there. Bring ambitious client projects to life in any industry with a fully integrated suite of business solutions, from e-com to events, bookings, and more. And extend the capabilities even further with hundreds of APIs and integrations. And you know what else? The workflows just make sense. There's the built-in AI tools, the centralized workspace, the on-canvas collaboration, the reuse of assets across sites, the seamless client handover. And that's not all. You want to know more? It's easy. Find out more at wix.com/studio. wix.com/studio. And we thank him so much for supporting Winders Weekly. Time for the back of the book. Mr. Paul Theroux.
I don't expect anyone to celebrate me, but I did turn off my mute. So
we're number
this
one.
This dog can learn new tricks. Leo, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Before I get into the tip, what's your feeling on passkeys? I've gotten some weird feedback from people who don't seem to trust passkeys or not sure that they're
secure. It's fully trustworthy.
Yeah.
The FidoNet Alliance is trustworthy. It's an open source consortium. It's safe. I think as implemented by Google and Apple, and I think it's safe. So, for instance, when I do a passkey on my phone, the passkey secret,
And
in fact, you can use YubiKey as your passkey.
Yeah.
But the passkey secrets on the iPhone are stored in the secure hardware enclave.
Right.
Very safe. Very safe.
Okay.
Convenience, it
surprises me.
That's another issue.
It depends on the implementation. So that's the thing. Like you cited Google. I would say actually Google's implementation is not one of the better ones because it requires so many steps.
Yeah. And I think often because the fallback is password, people are just going to stick with the password.
Yeah, they just, right. But yeah, but as you after your last week when you're doing the thing on the phone, I went and looked at it again because I keep looking at this. I'm like, I have to keep typing in my password. I don't understand.
Right.
But you can go through this convoluted series of steps where you don't have to. I like the idea that I could be on a device and say, I want to sign in with my passkey. And it says, okay, there's no passkey in this device. Do you want to use another device? And you can hold up your phone and do a QR code. Well, that's great. I mean, it's better than having to remember and type in a password and go through TFA, whatever. Yes. So Amazon the other day announced they have added passkey to support to the web version of their service and also to the iPhone app version. And so I installed it on both and tried it, and not on Android, although it's coming. And to be clear, on mobile, what they're referring to is like the app, because you can use passkey support. If you use Amazon on the web on mobile, that works fine. Actually, you can do it there too. And I would say this is one of the better ones, actually. I think this works pretty well. In fact, it does the thing I just mentioned, where I set it up first on the web, of course, because I want to be able to see it and whatever. And then when I went to set it up on, I guess, my iPhone, it said, hey, you already have this thing in the cloud. Do you want to use a, you know, get it from there? And it's like, yeah. And it, you know, it worked great. Like, it was really nice. Like, it just kind of jumped forward. So Amazon is tied to your credit card. I assume most of the people listening to this are.
Interesting question. Yeah.
This is exactly where you look, your identity accounts, Microsoft account, Google account, et cetera. Yes. I mean, put it everywhere. But if you have to start somewhere, I would go right to, if you're an Amazon customer, Prime customer, whatever, be sure to do this right
Follow
away.
The money. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, and they're, they did a really nice, I don't really like Amazon UI too much. This is well done. Like, this was done properly. It's very good.
I haven't used it yet.
Yeah, we're
straight. But Richard held up his YubiKey, and honestly, I think, you know. And I
always have one on me.
Always have one on me, too. Yep. And now that everyone's Nerds. Type C, I don't have to have that weird Type C / Lightning thing. One.
Yeah. Oh, the one with the two sides.
Yeah, that was crazy and right. expensive.
Right.
But yep. Often when you, I know with Google, when you get offered a passkey, you can use this if you've got this registered, the YubiKey registered. Yeah, yep. Clearly I would love to use a YubiKey with Amazon as well. I use 2FA.
Passkey support is in 23H2 and Windows 11, right?
Nice.
So
that's where it works. This is the same thing. It needs Windows to be hello. Everywhere. Once it's everywhere, maybe it'll take off.
Yeah. I think this is going to do it. I think 2FA, though very effective, and I mean like app-based 2FA, not text messaging, is fine. It works great. Most people have their phone all the time, so it's not a big deal. But I feel like most consumer type, the mainstream people probably haven't implemented it. I think this is one people can wrap their heads around because it's like, oh, wait, I don't have to enter my password. Yes, please. You know, I think this is going to do it. It's nice.
Yeah.
Because again, if you set up something on your phone at one point and don't have your phone,
right.
As long as you have, you're fine. You're fine on every device you use. It's nice.
Right. All right. So I'm going to go to my Amazon account and figure out how to turn this on.
Yep. I have the instructions. It's super easy, though. Just go to account. You'll see security and login or something. You'll see it. It's super obvious.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
And then app pick of the week. Adobe, a week or two ago had their big Max event where they added AI to everything. I mean, my God, it was an explosion of Firefly-based AI across all of their products. I don't know if you guys have ever looked at how much Adobe charges for these products. It's kind of expensive. I don't know how it – I mean, if you're not a creative professional, it doesn't make sense to pay for – any of those subscriptions, right? They're just too expensive. Yeah, it's crazy. But they do offer these Elements versions and for Photoshop and Premiere. And Premiere and Photoshop Elements 2024 just debuted, and they have a bunch of those AI features that were earlier available in the more expensive stuff. So also, I will just tell you, I am an Adobe Elements, an Adobe Photoshop Elements user. I usually go every other year because, there aren't that many big updates. This one, one of my biggest pet peeves with these products for the past, 3-4 years has been dark mode is not dark. It's like light gray and it doesn't scale well on different resolution or, scaled displays. They fixed this on both and it is... It actually looks like dark mode. It's wonderful. And honestly, when you're working with photographs and Photoshop or videos, you want the dark screen. No one's using a light screen. Obviously, it's crazy. So that's not an AI feature, but my God. So the AI stuff is kind of neat. They have a new, a pane at the bottom. And one of the things they have is it's basically like an AI effects pane and it has all this stuff. And I've gone back to some of my old photographs, like including some when I was a baby with my dad and stuff. And it's awesome. Like this stuff is really awesome. They also, and then there are just some random ones that happen to be things that I need. Like there's something called stylized photo text. And the idea here is you have text and the letters are each transparent. And what you're seeing is like a picture coming through it. Right. Which is kind of it's a common effect. I use it on the Eternal Springs logo for the YouTube channel, but it's actually very hard to do in Photoshop Elements. You can do it. It's very hard. I had been using Affinity Photo for that one thing. Super easy now in the new version of Elements. So there's a ton of stuff there. I've only kind of touched on the surface myself in here, obviously, but those things are available. The pricing is the same as always, $100 a piece, $150 for both, but they're always on sale. Don't ever buy them full price. And Premiere Elements has never come to the store, but Photoshop Elements has been in the Microsoft store since, I don't know, 2017, 2018, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they promised Premiere was coming because that's the way I would acquire it, but it hasn't yet. But anyway, like I said, look for sales. You can find it everywhere. Good stuff.
Okay.
Were you able to get your passkeys going there?
No, I don't see it. It's not offering
really?
It to me.
All right, let me. All right.
I went to the security settings and I disabled just to see if it would work my two-step, just to see if that then would offer me passkeys.
I just did something insane and you're both going to think this is the dumbest thing I've ever said, but I went to go to the browser and open a new tab. So I hit Control T, but I did it with Notion, and Notion supports tabs. And I did that.
Wow.
I know. See, that's the exact right response. Wow. Yikes. Are you sure you should be doing a podcast?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't. I know. I do that all the time, by the way. And frankly, yeah. I think it's a mistake to put a browser shortcut, because Control T is a browser shortcut, into your app, browser app, because then it's confusing.
Yeah. Focus is a problem.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is.
All right. I will. don't worry. I'm in login and security. I don't see passkeys, but at some point, maybe it's just slowly rolling out or something like that.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to look right now. I actually I can't. I hadn't signed in with a passkey in his computer, so I just used my phone.
Maybe you have to do it on a phone. Actually, I bet you that's what it is.
No, you don't. First time, I did it on the web first.
Maybe that's it's a rolling out kind of a thing.
No, if you're on the login and security screen, between primary mobile number and password, it says passkey. You don't see that?
Login and security, between primary mobile number, password, two-step, no.
Really? Huh. I wonder if you need to have, do you have two-step turned on?
Yeah. I tried turning
it
off.
You shouldn't have to. I don't know why it wouldn't be there.
I don't know. I don't see, by the way, I know people say, oh, I'm seeing your phone number. Doesn't matter. Because that's not, it's not my phone number.
Yeah. Sure. You're not after that number.
That number.
Someone's been resetting my Facebook account all week. It's not going to work.
That's a phone I don't really use. But it is if I forgot my password, I guess I could use that.
Okay. I don't know why.
I mean, they just must be rolling it out. It's okay.
They're not Google. Okay. They usually do things right away.
All at once. No, I saw that story too, and I thought, oh, how exciting. But I didn't. Yeah.
Right. How exciting. Not for me.
Not for me. For other people. That's all right. Because, I'm not all in on passkeys.
There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a good time to talk to Richard Campbell because he's got a very exciting Run His Radio coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, released earlier today, I had my chat with Nicole Stevens about all of the data storage solutions available in Azure. This really comes down to the fact that a lot of folks, because they were paying for SQL Server licenses on-prem, they put all their data in SQL Server, whether it needs to be relational or not. And so as you shift that over to Azure SQL, it becomes very expensive. And so, Nicole's big on create a landing site, sort of evaluate the data, look at the different data stores that are available to you, maybe save some money and gain some speed. So we talk through eventually the different elements and what their advantages and disadvantages are. And it also pointed to some great architecture guides and landing zone guides for doing data better when you get them up to the cloud.
Nice. Lovely.
Yeah, that was a useful bit of information for folks.
Now, I need a drink. Where would I go to get a nice liquor?
Well, when you're in Bulgaria, you drink rakia.
Rakia.
Say that again.
Rakia. I've seen rakia.
Bulgaria's pisco.
Yeah, actually got a bottle of rakia, and I didn't know what the hell it was. So tell me about it.
And you're not too pisco is done generally with the skins, but really rakia is a general name for a fruit brandy, whether that's grapes.
Yes.
Pear or plum. Mm-hmm.
That could be very good.
A lot of different in Bulgaria they call it sliva vista if it's made with plum,
or sliva
sliva vista is the Polish version of it,
right.
The Bulgarians claim to have done it first. There's plenty of evidence to show rakia appearing in the 14th century, but now archaeologists have dug around and said, oh, we've got some evidence on it for 11th century, so we're first. It's a big thing around here.
It's hysterical.
This whole western side of the Black Sea from Ukraine all the way down into the Adriatic and with Greece and so forth. They've all got variants on.
Wine was invented in Georgia.
Now you're over in the Caucasus, but yeah. Look, they have this. This is really old wine growing region. This is different.
It's been around a long time.
They've been around a long time. Yeah. Neolithic evidence of Neolithic winemaking. Yeah. Like that's been going in this area. And this particular version of, well, the thing with rakia is in Bulgaria, everybody has an uncle who makes them because every uncle has a plum tree. Yeah. And you can modify a coffee maker into a still and make a version of rakia. That doesn't mean you should drink it.
Life will find a way.
Oh, yeah. And it's typically put in old soda bottles. My general gauge, as I have experimented with many of these, is if it's got a sort of straw color to it, that's probably okay. If it's clear white,
it's moonshine, and you could be dead.
Be very careful. I have changed colors from a sip of this stuff. Like mm-hmm. it's a big deal. But this is a very premium rakia. This is much more of a brandy. This is from the Burgess Distillery. It's called Burgess 63 Barrel. And if you go to the website that includes the link, it's actually all in Bulgarian. You'll have to translate it. And this is white wine grapes that come from the Pomori region, which is right on the Baltic Sea. Not a place you should go right now, by the way.
Yeah.
Now, this region, there have been some version of a village or a city on it for 2,500 to 3,000 years. It was known as Enchialos, or by the sea in ancient Greek. With records going back to 500 BC. Of course, it was controlled by the Romans when they called this whole area Thrace, as in the province of Thrace, and primarily made wine with it, without a doubt. And it changed hands into the Byzantium Empire and then back to the Bulgars and over to the Ottomans until it lands the way it is today. But this is a very nice wine going region. Drink the wine. It's beautiful. And this is a simple distill. They simply do an iambic distillation, much more like Armagnac, but they call it a brandy. 40%. That color is from 5 years in oak barrels. So it's a clear liquor when distilled, but they do age it in barrels, and it doesn't pick up a ton of color. Traditionally French oak, although over here there's a few other variants, and you're never really sure which you're going to get. But typically sold in a 500 ml bottle. If you can find one, it's about 89 Bulgarian, which is about $30. You're not going to find it in the U.S., but I'm going to drink it. Very grappa-ish, big, fruity. Like, got a big note on it. Strong finish. This is much smoother and nicer. Well, in every respect, it's made like a brandy. It tastes nothing like brandy. It's got its own character to it and a really kind of cool, heady, perfumey finish to it on a high-end rakia. It is very rude to turn down rakia if you're in someone's home. At least taste a little of it. It's okay to cough if they feed you the jet fuel. Don't drink it quickly. It's a sipper. But if you're going to buy some, buy the nice stuff. It's not expensive, and you'll enjoy it.
You just reminded me of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and they're being served monkey brains.
Yeah.
And the woman or the kid says, "Oh my God, I can't eat that." And he's like, "Don't be rude. This is their culture. You have to do this." And it's like, I was as a kid sitting in the audience, I was like, wait a minute. How come they can't respect my culture? You know, like, why is this a one-way street?
Yeah.
You know? I was mental as a child is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in the hotel bar earlier today and going through tasting a few different berries. This is by far my favorite of the bunch.
Nice.
A big, rich, nice bottle.
Is there anything of this style that is in the United States? I mean, I know you can't get this exactly.
If you're going to go look for it, what you're looking for is Slivovitz, which is typically a plum brandy version.
Yeah, Polish plum brandy. Yeah,
those are the ones you're going to find. And the Romanians make a variant, and the Hungarians make a variant, and they're all very sure theirs is the best.
But
the vast majority of rakia I've drank was somebody's grandfather's or uncle's. There was a time when I was working closely with Telerik, and I would be in Sofia 3 or 4 times a year.
Wow.
And we would end up at one person or another's home, and every single one of them had homemade rakia.
Yeah, that's great.
And you should have at least one. And I learned that the only way to stop drinking rakia was to bring really good whiskey with me. Right. So we'd all have a round and a toast on the rakia, and then boom, I'd pull out a big old bottle of Dalmore 12, and that's what everyone wanted to drink. But yeah, I'm gonna, you know, it's coming on midnight around here. I think I'm gonna finish off a bottle of a glass of Rocky and call it a night.
Nice. Yep. Nice. Good job, my friend. Good job. And that concludes this thrilling, gripping edition of Windows Weekly. That there's Richard Campbell, runisradio.com. He's in Sofia, Bulgaria, but coming home to Canada next week.
Yep. Next week at Madeira Park.
The new locale.
Have a good flight.
Paul Thurrott is now an official homeowner in Mexico City.
I finally own something.
Yay. He is at Thurrott.com, Thurrott, two R's, two T's. Oh, and by the way, well, three T's if you count the first one. If you're not a premium member, you're missing out. Get that premium sub. Lots of good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. His books, Windows Everywhere and the Field Guide to Windows 11 and Windows 10, are available at leanpub.com. We do this show right here every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. This will be at 1,800 next week, 1,900 the week after, because we...
Wait, what? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because we are we're still on daylight saving time, but we will be on standard time the first Sunday in November.
We don't... in Mexico doesn't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So we're 2 hours off from what I normally am. We'll fly home before they switch back.
Oh, okay. So, I'm just going to say it will confuse you because we will no longer be at the same time where you are because we're going to move, but you aren't.
Yeah. I like the 1 o'clock start time. 12 is right. It's lunch.
Don't want to. Boy, we impeding on your lunch. That's terrible. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, it'll be 1 o'clock next time you're in Mexico.
Yeah.
The reason I mentioned the live times, you don't have to watch live. It's a podcast. You can listen whenever you want. But if you do want to watch us do it live, there is a live stream, audio and video, at live.twit.tv. And if you're watching live, chat with us live in our IRC or our Club Twit Discord. The club is probably the best way to join us. They've had a little sliv of it, and now they're dancing in the club. because you get ad-free versions of all the shows. You get the Discord, which it doesn't just limit itself to the shows. I mean, there's conversations about all sorts of stuff. Plus events that we put on in the club, like our escape room, which is coming up tomorrow, 3 p.m. Pacific. Our AI show, which is also tomorrow, 1 p.m. Pacific. The book club, the fireside chat, our Christmas show will be taping that. Club members can watch us do it live December 7th and on and on and on. Anyway, the point is, if you join the club, you get this, you get dancing, you get Paul's hands on.
I was just looking at the Discord.
Hands on Windows, which is a show he does exclusively for the club. There's Hands on Macintosh with Michael Sargent. There's Linux. There's the GizFizz. There's lots of stuff. We want to make the club fun, and we want your money. I'll be frank. That's what we want. We want your $7 a month. Now, I think that's a fair price for all that we give you. And the reason is, frankly, advertising is dwindling for podcasts. A lot of podcast networks going under. We don't want to go under. I don't have any plans to go under, but your help really does make a difference. So if you're not a member yet, not one of the 8,000 members, 7,946 paid members of a Club Twit. I know because I can see the number up here. We would love to have you. It's worth it, and it's a great group. Twit.tv/Club Twit. Their family plans and corporate plans as well. And we're all going to have fun in the club. Thank
Whether
you
want it or not, buddy.
After the fact, club member or not, you can get a copy of the show at twit.tv/ww. That's the webpage. The show notes will also be there. You can subscribe in your favorite podcast client. We have a feed, and there's a YouTube channel dedicated to it as well. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We really appreciate it. Hope you have a great week, and we will see you both back home where you belong next week on Windows Week.
It's midweek, and you really want to know even more about the world of technology. So you should check out Tech News Weekly, the show where we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news.
It's the biggest news. We talk with the people writing the stories that you're probably reading. We also talk between ourselves about the stories that are getting us even more excited about tech news this week.
So if you're excited, well, then join us. Head to twit.tv/TNW to subscribe.